Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Awimawa, 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 awimawa.
She's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. That we don't give a damn. Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Knights of the Round Table. You were listening in on 1800 Online, TCT, Awake Radio, No Borders, Shaziz Radio, and many other networks. Welcome to everybody and appreciate all the support and all that. We got a special guest on here today, Robert Murray Smith. Excuse me, Robert, didn't mean to get your name messed up there. I'm starting to babble there. Anyway, we also got Dame Ellie on here, and Honorable Knight Larry, and we got some other ones hopefully going to pile in here pretty soon. Ought to be a really good show. But in the meantime, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world out there, a crazy world, and there's a lot of good folks out there trying to make the world a better place, one positive pebble at a time. We're people into alternative energy research and alternative medicines and just basically alternatives to everything that is the system, that is the beast that's eating us all alive. And so with that said, I think there's a lot of talent out there, a lot of brilliant minds, and we're bringing them together in what I'd like to call the dream team, you know, that we can research a lot of different ideas together and find solutions to problems that exist in the world. See, I'm a firm believer that we don't have no energy crisis, but, you know, folks out there want to claim it's an energy crisis and all that kind of stuff, and yet their actions don't speak as loud as their words, you know. I mean, if fossil fuels is a problem for the environment and humanity in general, which on the war sense, I have to agree that people fighting over resources such as oil and water and all that kind of stuff is to me ridiculous, considering the fact that you know, we have other alternative energies that we could be using, and the fact that the earth is 3/4 covered in water kind of sounds ridiculous to be fighting over water. And for those folks that say, well, you can't necessarily drink seawater, well, Tell those folks over there in Dubai, you know, they're some really brilliant individuals who put up huge desalination plants and literally built the land they're standing on. So there's some ingenuity there. There's some really true genius in the construction of the buildings that they have, where they literally pump water up to the top of skyscrapers, and as the water's coming back down, they can use it for flushing your toilets and running water and, you know, just about everything that you do in your normal house on the ground. And at the same time, it has a cooling effect. It helps to cool the buildings down because of the heat in the area where they're at. So with that said, there's all kinds of methods by which you can get around and, you know, do heating and cooling and alternative energy and stuff. It's just there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle out there together. And we're bringing these pieces of the puzzle together with the Dream Team, and we're actually going to create these devices that we keep talking about and put them out there free for the public so that we can try to benefit everybody. You know, maybe the apocalypse is going to happen tomorrow. Maybe it ain't going to happen at all. Maybe it'll happen in the next 5 or 10 years. And so I'm not really into all the whole doomsday thing, but if you're going to buy auto insurance or house insurance, you ought to have some education insurance as well to keep yourself something on the store, something on your shelves for just such an emergency, you know, just in case, you know, extra bottled water, some extra canned goods, something. But most of all, extra knowledge, you know, knowledge on how to start a fire and do certain things, and what you can eat around your general vicinity, you know, things that are already in nature, you know, wild berries and nuts, and, you know, learn a little bit about gardening and some aquaponics or hydroponics so that you can grow food and fish at the same time. There's all kinds of things out there. It's a You know, it's amazing that we got this such vast knowledge right now with the internet, and you can do all kinds of researches. There's tons of YouTube videos out there, a lot of brilliant minds, a lot of knuckleheads too, so try to steer clear of the knuckleheads and just pay attention to the brilliant minds out there. So, you know, there's just, like I said, we have this amazing internet right at the moment. And I'm always saying that while you have access to this amazing tool, download all these how-tos, you know, put them on paper, put them on hard drive, you know, study up the information, print it out, whatever, so that in a worst-case scenario, you would be prepared for, you know, just such an emergency. My mad science lab, I show you all kinds of things like simple solar and things that you can do to, you know, generate electricity. Maybe at this point in time, you can't run your entire house, but you can charge batteries and such like that. So, you know, with that said, I'm still working on the Holy Grail, and I think we are right on the very edge of being able to literally produce a device that would, at the very least, supplement your energy bill so that you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, paying a real high bill or anything like that. And if the power grid ever went down, you know, it's not going to be that big of a deal, you know, outside of keeping your stuff cool, you know. But there's also lots of methods for doing that. So instead of being long-winded, I hear a siren in the background. I hope everybody's all right. Anyway, all right, Sammy, we got it. That's my dog in the background. He likes to howl whenever he hears a siren. Anyway, so what do you say we go around the table and welcome all of our guests that's here? We got Larry, you want to start? Or?
Sure. Good morning. Good morning.
Go ahead.
We're all here. We're looking for great things from Robert Murray Smith today. Really excited that he's able to join us.
And
he's a worry.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm capable of great things, Larry.
Well, Robert,
we know better.
I seen your latest video. I think it's your latest video. Maybe not your latest video. Somebody sent me a link to your video with the swag generator, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit today as well. And I believe we have Ellie in here too, don't we?
Yep.
Say hi to everybody, Ellie. Woohoo!
Hi.
All right. Well, you know, with that said, let's go back and talk to Robert there. You want to talk about explain to the listeners out there a little bit about that swag generator that you was working on?
Yeah, certainly. It's based on the idea that when you put a salt across a sheet of graphene, what happens is one half of the salt gets sucked up by one part of the water, and the other half of the salt gets sucked up at the other side of the water. And when that happens, you get a potential difference. You get a voltage on that drop of water. If you can do that on a big bit of water, then you get a hell of a lot of voltage. And that's basically what the swag generator does. It takes that one drop and manages to make it a whole sheet of water. And as we wash that salty water over the graphene, what we get is a good old whack of voltage being generated.
Well,
now, it depends very much on what the salt is. So if you use a salt like sodium chloride, it's only got one positive charge on it, we get quite a low voltage. If we use something like copper chloride, it's got two positive charges on it, the voltage is doubled. Now, as we were talking and we're getting this set up, I've literally just run an experiment where I use aluminium chloride, where it's got three positive charges on it, and the voltage just whacks right up there.
Let's
get to see that video.
Yeah, I can't wait. If you could post a link to that video, that would be awesome. I did subscribe to your channel because I'm fascinated in your work. I've got another friend out there who's working in something similar to what you're doing there, nanotechnology, where you know they coat different types of metals and work towards getting some really decent voltage out of them. But I'm really fascinated in that because there's all kinds of potential, you know, with just, I would say, ambient energy in the air, you know, hitting in. Because I watched that deal, and at one point you did touch the deal and watch it come up with the rubber gloves on. The voltage did come up, and then when you touched it with your bare hand, it came up as well. And, you know, there was a difference between when you had it on the floor as opposed to when you had it in the air. So I see a lot of amazing potential in that device.
Well, to be honest, it's all based on this ink that I came up with, and I don't really think I know what I've got there. I mean, when I started it, I had a specific thing in mind. What I wanted was a conductive ink. That's all I wanted. Then when I invented this thing and started playing with it, it does some amazing things. I think it does things I don't even know about. And so I've started sending this out to people who are working with it and doing stuff. I mean, there's a couple of guys here in the UK who are just doing some amazing things with it. Fetch It Now UK and Mr. Flat Hunter are just great. You know, you should check out their channels as well to see what they're doing.
Yeah, I would be interested. I would like to invite all of those individuals who are doing research as well to the Dream Team because, you know, I think we are right on the edge of literally building a device using off-the-store shelf things that your average Joe could build with just a little bit of instructions. And so with that said, I think that would be a benefit for everybody. But
you know, I 100% agree with you. You know, I don't think this is really for scientists in universities and big companies. I mean, my whole way of doing stuff is to make sure that everybody can do it. And I agree with that. I don't think it's that complicated. I think when you have the basic materials in front of you, just about anybody can build this stuff.
Well, I know you've had the opportunity to speak with Coltis, and he's working with me. We're trying to get virtual labs up and running so that people can actually watch real-time experiments, and if they want, they could follow right along, and by the time we get done building a device in front of them, they'll have one in front of them as well. And so this would be, you know, a plus for anybody who's interested in alternative energy research. There is a group out there called the Atmospheric Group, and they're doing some really amazing stuff with, I think it's graphene, that they have. They had coated a wire, and they got two 200-foot poles that have graphene coating across that wire, and they're pulling out 2,000 volts out of the air and bringing it down and putting it into a huge capacitor bank and ending up with 9,000 volts. Now, that's nothing to scoff at, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Atmospheric Ion Group, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing research.
I've seen some of that stuff.
But I'm working on plasma technology at the same time. My research goes back to Tesla's research and all the way back to the mercury arc rectifier. Are you familiar with that?
I am.
The mercury arc rectifier, I'm not sure that they realized how much power that they actually had access to whenever they had the mercury arc rectifier. For those folks out there who are new to the show, I'll go ahead and say The Mercury Arc Rectifier was essentially the very first plasma reactor ever designed, but that's not what it was developed for. Back when Edison was doing DC current, they already had some infrastructure up for DC current, and when Tesla and Westinghouse worked in towards AC current and finally got the final bid for building the generator plants and stuff like that, well, there was already some infrastructure ready that was being used for high voltage DC, like elevator motors. And they had to figure out a way to be able to use this new current called AC current to be able to still be able to run DC current. So they essentially had to build a rectifier. And how they did it was they took a glass tube with anodes and cathodes in it and a little tiny pool of mercury down in the bottom of it. When you shot the high voltage AC inside, it would literally create a dead short right out of the gate and create heat that would vaporize that mercury into a fine gas, and then the AC still coming in would energize that mercury vapors into a plasma state, which in turn would create enough pressure inside there that would only allow the electrons to flow in one direction, thus forth making DC current. And so, you know, you basically built the very first diode. Well, I wouldn't say the very first. Somebody else found another type of diode, but a really impressive diode out of, using the plasma. And so that's where my research is based on, and using Tesla's research as well. I'm also working on a couple different things. I've put together some ideas for basically building either a corona-style motor or a combination plasma corona. I don't know if you've ever seen the corona motors that they've been doing, but there's some really good videos out there where one guy in particular takes some neon tubes and he has the wires coming out each side of it, and they're bent in opposite directions. And whenever he fires up the Slayer exciter that he's running his coils with, you see this motor spinning around, and it's got a really beautiful corona off of this thing, and the neon's lit up, and he's getting some serious RPMs out of this deal. So I literally believe that you can build a high voltage generator that will produce enough radiant energy to feed itself back into itself. And I'm not going to say at this point in time that it's like zero point or even perpetual motion for that matter, but I can see the potential of the radiant energy coming off of the coil systems the way this thing is designed to put enough energy back in to keep that centerpiece spinning, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot of amazing technology going on, and I'm glad that Cultus stumbled onto your stuff and brought it to my attention, because when I watched that video, there's a lot of things. You know, we got solar, we've got wind, we've got earth batteries that can be used, and that technology there, picking the energy up out of the air. You can also pick up everything from every single radio signal that is floating around us at all times. And so there's so many different methods by which to capture energy that we're floating in. We're literally floating in a sea of energy. And if you can do this with as least mechanical parts, you would always have a backup. If it weren't raining outside, you can even pick up energy from piezoelectric as the raindrops hit each of the little crystals. They'll vibrate and produce a charge. There's all kinds of different ways. But even if it's raining outside, you're still getting energy. If it's windy outside, you're getting energy. If it's sunny outside, you're getting energy. Even in the dark, you know, we're talking about picking up energy from all different directions and not harming the environment at the same time. You know, I get frustrated, and on my Mad Science show, I call it Mad Science because if us, the average Joe out here, the real researchers as far as I'm concerned, can figure this out, you would figure that the guys in the really fancy labs would have been able to figure this out a long time ago. Of course, we all know it falls back to money. What's your thoughts on that?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, the thing about alternative energy is it's got to be a strategy. You've got to think about all the different kinds of alternative energy. Money only goes towards one thing where it can make more money, and so we've been driven towards centralized power generation, which is very brutal. You're burning, it's basically burning. We burn coal, we burn gas, we burn wood, we burn nuclear fuel. It's all one technology, but it's a technology that's simple and brutal and can be put in place cheaply. I mean, I know that it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to build these things, but in terms of power generation, it's cheap.
Yeah.
And so they do this cheaply and they sell it expensively from a central thing because they can control it and they can charge for it. I mean, the big problem with Tesla when he first started to generate radiant energy was that Westinghouse couldn't charge for it. So he shut him down.
Yeah,
because
he
couldn't
exactly.
be charged for. So it has to be controllable. It has to be simple, and it has to be chargeable. And that's been the big focus of how to generate energy in our world. Now, of course, that's changing. We're looking at different ways of doing it. We're moving towards something called microgeneration, where we look at generation at the point of supply instead of at a central point and then distributed, which, if you think about it, is a huge waste of money and time. Just think about all that copper running over every single country in the world, all the power that's lost in the lines. It's huge. And so we're going towards microgeneration. The demands on microgeneration are far, far less than the demands on centralized generation. But it means we have to have a strategy on generation. That is, you can't just use one methodology. You can't do wind generation because wind will last for a while, then finish. So you have to think about half a dozen things that you can implement, and each of those things has to be relatively simple and doable at the house.
Well, I like the way you think.
Thank you.
Well, two things before I forget them. One of the things is on the power company. There's a sham going on with the power company. I don't even think that a lot of the workers at the power company don't realize. But they're using some Tesla technology because they're actually using the earth as a tank circuit for the return path so their generators don't have to work near as hard.
Yes.
And on our form of electricity, we literally use brute force to move the electron from point A to point B, you know, using a strong magnetic field to shake it loose. And you don't have to use brute force to do it. So with that said, you could literally, with the right frequency range, you know, the average electric motor runs at 60 hertz. And so if you're running at 60 hertz, anything higher than that will create heat, which in turn eventually will destroy that particular device because of the coating on the copper wire being burned off. So imagine if you could just put just enough energy to get those electrons to trade places. See, the electrons don't have to trade places fast. All they have to do is trade places. That trading places releases an amazing amount of energy that you can literally build I believe Larry's working on something similar to this. You can literally work to where when you generate electricity, you don't produce any heat on these coils because all you're doing is basically stimulating that electron to change places with the next one in line and so on down the line. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, if you think about AC, AC doesn't actually go anywhere. It's like a saw. It's a push and a pull.
Yeah.
So you're right. The electrons aren't flowing anywhere. They're pushing backwards and forwards, if you like. So your trading places idea, yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Never really thought of it that way.
If all you have to do is use a small amount of stimulation to get that electron to trade places, that's all you need. You don't need the brute force of a strong magnetic field. Because what you end up with is you get more power than that wire can actually handle because now you're forcing these electrons to, it's building up pressure behind. And that pressure, while them atoms are beating, or them electrons are beating the heck out of each other, they're creating friction, which in turn is creating heat, which is eventually going to destroy your electric motor or your generator. So if you stimulate it just enough, just to get that electron to move, that's all you need. It don't have to happen fast. All it does is have to happen, and you'll get the same amount of energy for less amount of energy having to be forced into it. You see where I'm coming from?
I do. It's to do with the job that you want to do. I mean, if you think about nature and our bodies, I mean, what's the body temperature in Fahrenheit? 30, 39?
98.6 degrees on our side.
Okay. Yeah, 98.6. And your body raises itself to that temperature against the environment with nothing more than a muffin.
Yeah.
It does it all day long, every day, by transferring electrons in something called the Krebs cycle. And it does it in a very efficient way, so that none of that energy is wasted. If we wanted to raise something to 98 degrees, we'd have to burn megajoules of energy to do it.
Yeah.
But your body does it on a muffin.
And that's why what you said earlier was really important. See, I do everything on a small scale to prove a point. You know, even if you're down in the millivolt range, something's happening there, you know?
Yes.
And you can take that millivolt range and, you know, you can run a series, like, especially the design that you've got working on. Imagine if you had a series of these setting out on poles out in your yard. You know, you had a field out there that had, literally had a set of these in, and you were running them into capacitor banks, kind of using like Tesla's had, you know, how Tesla had the spark gap going on. When that builds up enough of charge, it will literally jump across that gap. Well, you can charge capacitors while that's going on. And
well,
so
there's a huge concept that people are missing out on, because it doesn't matter if it generates millivolts. If it generates millivolts for the next 200 years without needing repair,
exactly.
And the cost is insignificant. I mean, it's sure, an electric generator will generate quite a few amps of power, but it wears out. It wears out in a few years. This thing will last 200 years just sitting there, generating watts after watts after watts, without ever needing repair, without ever needing look at. You just sit it there. You don't do anything with it. And this goes back to an earlier point that I was talking about microgeneration. The problem with microgeneration is, if you use a standard system, so you get your own generator, or you set up a wind turbine, you have the battery bank, it needs maintenance.
Yep.
It needs looking after, and that's a drag to people. People won't do that. If you can get something where it just sits there, day in, day out, never needs looking at, and generates you power, that's going to be a winner.
And the key, going back to what I said, is that you don't need to use brute force in order to create the electricity that you need. All you need to do is get that electron to move, and you can do that in the range that you're talking about.
Yeah, something very weird is happening here. I've got a swag plate in some aluminium chloride, and the voltage is just climbing up.
Cool.
I've just set it running while we were talking, and it's just going up and up and up. That is so weird.
Well, that's
the
kind.
I'm just doing a video for you guys.
That's the kind of technology that I love, and I'm trying to bring all these people together, because all of these are pieces of the puzzle. My buddy out there, Ryan from Abrams Lab, I mean, he's an amazing guy. Yeah, he's working with the Slayer Exciter, and there's a lot of things that he's doing with that Slayer Exciter that people need to pay attention to. It's the little anomalies that are going on in these videos that are the most important, because if you put all these pieces of the puzzle, you kind of alluded to it whenever you was talking about how not counting on one particular deal, not putting all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, but using everything that is happening around you, from solar, wind, hydrothermal, radiant energy, all this stuff right here, putting all these pieces of the puzzle together to get a generator to actually run the inefficient appliances that we got now. But if you redesign the entire system, instead of using brute force to create your energy, if all you're doing is creating a signal strong enough to literally cause the electron to trade places with the next one in line, then you can do the same job for next to nothing. And if you can do this solid state version of it, to where you have no moving parts and nothing to maintain, there's the holy grail that everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. You're spot on, though. It's to do with legacy. You know, we've got all these machines and all these dishwashers and heating appliances, and we've got millions upon millions of them, and people aren't going to throw those away and swap to a new technology. So we've got all this legacy that we have to deal with, all these things from the past that have to be dealt with. But you're spot on. What we need to do is rethink the way we're doing things. So things like the ion motor, for instance. That guy's motors are just astonishing. They're wonderful.
Oh,
imagine
yeah.
sticking them in a washing machine. Suddenly, it's starting to look like what you were talking about. We're starting to work with the power instead of force it. But that requires everybody to be on board with that, and for us to swap all this stuff out. And that's a long-term program. But it's a program that if we get on board now, we can make that change for the future.
Exactly. And if I built a coronal motor that would literally have enough torque, and I believe I can do this. If I built a corona motor that literally had torque, it would actually be creating a little bit of ozone, which if you really seriously think about it, you could clean your clothes with water like you normally do and disinfect them at the same time.
There you go.
So, you know.
I just want to jump in here for a second. It is a great, extreme honor to have you on the show here, Dr. Robert Murray Smith, Smutty Muddy Mudman. I've been watching your videos for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the knowledge and sharing so freely.
No, my pleasure. I hope it helps a little.
Well, Muddy, if you haven't watched any of his videos, he does the actual flux wind turbines like you see in his picture up there in Skype.
Yeah.
And he does amazing work. He carves his own props, and he's got a brilliant mind. That's the best I can say. I mean, he's got a lot of good ideas, and this is why I call this the dream team. Larry, he's working on some specialized coil systems. Like I said, Dieden, he's working on stuff, and Cultus is working on atmospheric motors, and we got Mitko. I don't know where he is today, but he's AWOL.
I think you get that. I think you get the motor running a little more RPMs and just gear it up. Don't worry about torque. Most of your electric motors don't have as much torque as people imagine. It's just because they spin so many RPMs in the gearing.
You know, I was thinking exactly that as you were talking. If you think what about a fan motor, shaded pole motors, they have next to no torque on them.
Well, I don't remember. I think I said this in my video, this last video that I did. There's a huge light bulb that I got out there, and I'm running it with a 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter that's running off an old car battery that should by rights be dead by now, but it's not. It's literally... you can light up a fluorescent bulb on the positive or negative side while this thing's running. It's impressive, and it doesn't affect the DC current in any way whatsoever. But it has a rejuvenating effect, whether it's shaking off the crud off the plates or whatever. But it has rejuvenated that battery back up to over 13 volts. And so, you know, that bulb that I was using in this video, when you put your hand next to it, you can literally feel the pressure of the corona coming off of there. You can feel it. I mean, you can actually feel the pressure before you actually get your hand down on that bulb. And so those corona motors that they're working on, if you design this just right, and you, instead of just having, you know, one setup, you got, if you can visualize a set of discs like 20 of them, 10 of them being high voltage generators, whether it be Wimshurst style or high voltage windings in there. 10 of them would be your charging system, and the other 10 would be aluminum plates with plasma chambers on there with the probes that are coming out that's actually spitting off the corona. You could get an amazing amount of torque, and as long as your bearings would hold up, there wouldn't be no limit in the RPMs that you could actually get out of this thing. And because I watched this video, the latest video this one guy did, and he should have a whole lot more subscribers than what he does, and I'm going to try to remedy that by attaching him to my channel so he can get more subscribers. But he was getting some serious RPMs compared to the scale that he was doing this thing on. Not only was it beautiful to watch because it had it was like a pure circle of corona, and it also had the neon bulbs lit up as well, so it made a pattern on there that really looked beautiful and really impressive work. Awesome video. I'll try to get a link out to each and every one of you for that video so you can watch it too. But I see a lot of potential here with the atmospheric motor, the corona motors, and all the different technologies together, the nano coatings and the technology like you're working with. I mean, I feel 100%, actually 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt that if we all come together on a design, I can draw up the crude mechanical design that I got in my head of this whole deal. I see it working. I feel, honestly, that we could literally, within a month's time, build a device that would run the inefficient appliances that are already on the shelves, and that would buy the time for humanity to actually make that step further to where we were actually talking about, instead of brute forcing the electron to the next spot, just putting just enough energy with a solid state design that would create the same amount of electricity and still be able to run the inefficient appliances. Does anybody agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. It's a matter of organization.
Well, I see the talent that's going on out here, and it's amazing. And, you know, it's kind of sad that we're in a time that we're in right now where there's so much chaos going on in the world wars and all the crazy stuff that's happening. And my hopes is that we can get this out there and calm society down with a new invention and try to save the planet before the knuckleheads at the top actually you know, blow it all up or whatever. You know, it just sickens me that we got this beautiful Earth with all these resources and brilliant minds, and the brilliant minds never get heard. If you if you ain't got a sheepskin from some major college and in some sort of secret college fraternity, then your word doesn't seem to matter out there. If you even question the laws of physics, you know, it's kind of like that guy standing back in the old days that said, whenever they said the Earth was flat, he said, well, if the Earth is flat, then why is it when that boat goes over the horizon, it disappears? Is it falling off the Earth? And then weeks later, the same boat will come back over the horizon. So, what's going on? Couldn't it be round? Well, that was heresy, man. You can't say that, because if you question mainstream science, you're a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. And I wish they'd get the doggone dang right. It's aluminum foil. It's aluminium, you know. It's not tin. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you don't have the right bits of paper and you don't have the right contacts, then, yeah, it's very difficult to get heard.
But as far as innovation, the average guy like us, we're smoking the mainstream science guys. They can't, if they are out there watching, they're boggled, because how are these guys without the education that we got doing all this, you know?
Well, it's because they're not interested in doing what we're doing. They're interested in something else. That's why.
Money.
Whenever something doesn't make sense, it's probably because you're not looking at the right reason. The reason a lot of science guys do science is for the funding.
Yeah.
They do it to keep the grant or the chair in the university. They generate papers, and these papers are almost meaningless and almost exact copies of what went before. But that's okay, because that gets you a grant. And that's the way these people think. They're not, the bulk of them, and I know it sounds horrible, but the bulk of them are not interested in forwarding science per se. They're interested in maintaining their chair.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because I'm kind of disappointed, because when I was a kid, I figured by the year 2000 we'd be flying around in cars, you know, and
yeah,
here we are still in the Flintstone age,
like PSM Molar. Yeah, I always wanted one of those when I was a kid growing up, and I read the popular science magazine. I said, yeah, I want a hovercraft car that does 253 miles per hour. Yeah, I want that. Just vertical takeoff and land. I got into studying that, and over the years I did every search I could, every so often, just to see where it's come to. And so far they say it's just too unstable to put out to the public. I said, man, I still want one.
Well, if you really seriously look into it, the standard inefficient system that we're going in, and the ragtag power grids that we have in all of our countries, not only are a safety hazard, you know, because you know, if you put too much amperage through a wiring system, you'll burn it up. So if you're using things like what Larry's working with, and things like what we're talking about, where you're just putting just enough energy in there to get the electron flow, and you're not producing that heat, well, then there's no chance of fire going on there. See, now the poor insurance companies ain't going to make money if your house ain't burning down. Well, that's sorry about their luck, but I would rather keep my house, you know, than make them rich. So, you know, and the oil companies, You know, you got to oil and coal companies. I know they got to have a job and everything, but yeah, well, what if we could, instead of having to pull tons and tons of coal out, what if we could throw one little chunk of coal into a system that would just use that energy just enough to stimulate the energy that we're creating and make enough energy for everybody out there? I mean, for Pete's sake, right now, we in our nuclear plants are taking a radioactive material, and all it does to produce energy is boilable water, creates steam, which in turn creates energy that pushes the turbines that turn the generator heads. So we're still in the steam factory, man. We're still back in the old steam technology, and we're doing it on a toxic level. It, you know, if you go into all that, how dangerous radiation is and stuff. It's nuts.
That's where Dr. Raymond Head came in with his theory of putting things under a vacuum and putting one part of it out there in the sun and the other part in the shade. Put it under a vacuum, it boils at whatever degree you want, pretty much. So all you got to do is equalize that and put part of it out there in the sun, part of it in the shade, and he's got steam power. I think water expands, what, 1,800 times?
So what's,
is that correct?
So what's the stop... What's to stop people from building solar powered either 650 or 1250 psi boiler systems? There's nothing stopping them. If you got a giant field out there and you have a whole bunch of black steel tubing running back and forth across this field as the sun's beating down on there, I guarantee you that'll get hot enough to turn that doggone water into steam.
That's free energy, bub. Just like Raymond Head said, it's free energy.
Side for Muddy Muddy Mudman, if you stick some copper nanoparticles in that water, it increases the efficiency by about 400%.
What kind of nanoparticles? Graphene or what?
Copper.
I'm sorry, say again.
Copper.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, think about what...
videos on how to make them very simply at home. So you can make some, stick it in your... It should be very useful to you, actually. Stick it in any heat transfer fluid you've got, and it improves the efficiency of the heat transfer fluid.
Think
so
about...
How do I get the nanoparticles
Get some copper sulfate, mix it in water, not much of it, and stick some vitamin C in there. Stir it, the copper nanoparticles will form a kind of reddish-brown liquid. They're about 4 nanometers across.
Excellent.
I've done a video on it that goes through the process step by step.
Think about what's happening on a small scale, such as when the water is actually being turned into steam. All you're doing is literally separating that water molecule. Can somebody add Thomas into the call?
I bet I can.
All you're doing is essentially separating that water molecule. And so with putting the nano copper in there like you were talking about, I mean, you're actually putting in an extra boost in something that would, because copper is a really good conductor of heat. And so you're speeding the process up.
The problem is water obviously absorbs heat very poorly. So the copper nanoparticles get the heat to the point very easily, so they absorb the heat and whack it straight in the molecule rather than sort of having to get it through the bulk of the fluid, because water is actually a relatively poor conductor.
And so while you're running this through your boiler system, you could actually recapture this stuff with the right systems. You know, all you're trying to do literally is to get the steam created. And so I know you know how distillation works. You know, like when I was talking earlier about over in Dubai, when they separate the salt from the water, they're distilling it. And so when you when you're going through the whole process of building steam, the steam goes up one way, the copper nanocle particles go down the other way, and you can...
No, they're so small, they go with it.
Good morning, Thomas.
4 nanometers is pretty small.
Would you get to a point, though, where you would literally be coating the inside of your boiler?
There is some really, really interesting work done on this. They're running Stirling engines with it. So if you want to have a look at Stirling engines and heat transfer fluids with copper nanoparticles, it'll probably answer a lot of your questions. But there's been quite a bit of work done on it.
See, that's what I'm talking about. We got to get all these guys at the table. You know, the Knights of the Round Table is a place for everybody to come together and, you know, find the solutions to problems that exist in the world. And, man, I can't even begin to tell you how amazed I am that for as long as we've been doing this show, I'm still learning stuff every day. I mean, it's awesome.
There's always stuff to learn. Good morning, Thomas.
You'll have to come closer to the mic there, Thomas. You sound like you're, like, off in the distance.
Ah, there we go.
There you go.
Plug the microphone in. That works.
Yeah.
It was clipped up.
Turn it on, mate. That always works.
Yeah.
Well, we got a fascinating conversation going on here, and I know you're going to love it because you're in a lot of different chemistry. I'll just let you and Robert talk it out. He was talking about putting nanoparticles of copper into water. And just go at it, guys.
Well, I was going to say, I when I saw your work on the copper nanoparticles and making them with ascorbic acid, this is kind of the fascinating part about that was that, you know, I'm thinking, because you can use that for a paint, one of the ideas that I had was to basically take styrene, dissolve it in xylene and put it together, you know, put it out on something that it can be peeled off of, or something as a substrate that would hold it still, and do multiple layers of that and set that up with something to pull, like traces like that are on solar cells, which the copper nanoparticles would be great for that. You paint that in on traces with, like, say, a screen printing process, and draw all that power from the static that builds up on it after you put it up on like a scaffold or something, and do it in layers. You can do it literally like in a horizontal manner like you do solar cells, but since it's air you're looking for, you just make it like a big radiator to let the air flow through from the edge and back out the other edge.
Yeah. You know what a percolation threshold is, don't you?
No.
It's the level that you have to add something to make it conductive. So if you add very few nanoparticles, they won't touch. There's no conductive pathway. You've got to add enough so that they touch and create a conductive pathway. If you add too much, then you degrade your metric system, your binder system, so the whole thing becomes weaker. So the first thing is to find out what the percolation threshold is, how much you have to add there so that you get the bulk conductivity. And it's really noticeable, you know, it's not a challenge. You add a bit, test the resistance, and you'll see it shoot up all of a sudden. That point at where it shoots up is the percolation threshold. After you keep adding, it'll go up a little bit, but not very much. So at that point, and for most things, it's kind of around about 25% by volume, something like that. Things like graphene, it's 1 to 5%, depending on your graphene, to get that percolation. So once you've got that, you've got a working system. The other problem with copper nanoparticles is because they're so small. Have you ever seen iron filings? Iron nanoparticles in air? They're pyrophoric, they just explode.
Mm. Wow.
They oxidize very, very quickly. Copper's not pyrophoric, but it oxidizes very quickly. So you've got a problem with the oxidation state. Now, once you've applied it, so you find your percolation threshold, you apply it, over time, in a very short time, it will lose its conductivity. So what you need to do is cap it or flash it. You need to sinter it. Now, if you get a xenon bulb, say about 750 watts, and flash it a couple of times, it will sinter the copper and reduce the copper oxide back to copper.
I didn't know that it was actually melting, you know, doing the sintering process with that little bit of power. Well, as I say, that means the copper oxide particles could be laid on something the way they do, like toner.
Yeah.
Or the 3D printers that use a powder and then center it, and then you could just run a laser diode that's like a watt or something and focus it to really tiny points, so you're getting a lot more than a watt and just...
Yeah. Xerox are doing it. There's another company called FlashForge. Have a look at Xerox's work and FlashForge's work on it. And it's called photonic sintering, which you can look up as well. But taking your idea, so, you know, you make up your paint, your ink, which you know is not going to be conductive, not a problem. Paint it out to get your sheets. and then photonically sinter it, and then layer and photonic sinter and layer and photonic sinter, as long as you've got the percolation threshold right and your matrix is actually covering it, then you won't get reoxidation as a problem.
Well, the other thing I was looking at, too, was like Wilmhurst generators, where they use two dissimilar materials, one positive and one negative, and you either spin those past each other. I guess they can this be done with air in between them? Because the one that Coltis has that was shooting sparks, he has like a little tiny bit of gap of air between his two wheels.
Yeah, so, I mean, without a doubt, if you put it in a vacuum, if you put it in a fluid, a dielectric fluid, then obviously you're going to have a drag problem. If you put it in a vacuum, then you increase the breakdown voltage between the plates so you can get the plates closer together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's without a doubt, if you stick it in a vacuum, it's going to work better.
Wow.
But air is dielectric anyway. I think the breakdown voltage is it 1 kilovolt per centimeter or something? I can't remember exactly. But the breakdown voltage is quite high, but not high enough for things like a Wimshurst. So you're always going to get corona and breakdown between the plates and the Wimshurst, because they tend to generate on a sort of 12-inch disc. They'd be about 10,000 volts or something.
Well, what I was thinking, though, was to do multiple discs that have a positive and a negative side to each disc.
Like a wobble stop?
I'm not sure. I've never seen anything that does this, so I'll have to look that up. But, you basically make each disc so it's spinning the opposite direction, and you coat one side positive, one side negative, and just kind of stair step them all the way down, and then use the traces like the copper nanoparticles, make some aluminum nanoparticles if that can be done. I know aluminum is much more reactive to the elements.
It's much more challenging. Why don't you try two things that you know are going to be electronegatively dissimilar but not be so challenging? For instance, graphite and copper.
Well, I was thinking the graphite would be good because it's a neutral element. I would think that would have like a neutral, a neutral threshold and connect the two together. Connect the
electronegativity is about 2.2, I think.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking that would also eliminate, like, because the idea is to basically put traces of the metal that are on opposite sides of the piezoelectric series.
Uh-huh.
On the corresponding material. So if it's an electronegative material, put a negative substance on that, and on the positive side, use a positive metal like lead or aluminum, and at the edge or down at the core where they're connecting together, use the graphene or the graphite to connect the two together, so you're also sure that there's not going to be any kind of galvanic effect generating any other power, or it's not going to cause a galvanic effect breaking down your junction point, and just stair-step them together. And of course, the other thought was to use the same process, but don't use any spinning, anything. Literally just big sheets, put them out where air can blow between them. You know, a little bit of airflow is all it should take to generate quite a bit of power off of that, since you're essentially putting them together in series, with the top side being the first portion, like a volt pal, and then the bottom being the second portion, and then the next layer is the next layer in the volt pile, where you've got a positive, negative, positive, negative, all the way down. And you could, some of the stuff that you to work with would be really easy to make massive sheets of it.
I like that idea. I can see what you're saying. I think it's a good idea. I like it. Quite exciting.
Well, the other thing, too, is the research, process that you were showing for making graphitic carbon nitride, seeing if there was a way maybe to insert in the place of the nitrogen, or at least most of the nitrogen components, fluorine for one substance, so you get maybe something better than Teflon when it comes to the extreme negative side of that triboelectric effect, and on the other side inserting something that's positive and using those two graphitic carbides.
Are you talking about a heteroatomic doping, or are you talking about a substance where it's covalently bonded?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm assuming the graphitic carbon nitride is a covalent bond, is it not?
Because it is. The nitrogen's bonded into the carbon nitride. So you're thinking about replacing some element of nitrogen with fluorine. Is that what you're thinking?
Right, like basically start with the urea to do this. Not make the graphite carbide and then try to replace it, because it seems like that apparently that's a lot more stable than the urea is.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be harder to knock that in out from in between there. So.
Yes, it would. Yeah. But it wouldn't be too difficult to dope it. I mean, you know, that would be a first stage process, wouldn't it, to try doping it with fluorine and see what happens. Because if you introduce fluorine into the crystal matrix or into the graphitic matrix, it'll sit there having an effect. Mm-hmm. That might be a sort of more approachable way of doing it. Otherwise, you're going to have to change your precursor, aren't you?
Right.
In which case, you're not really sure what's going to happen when you put it through the process.
Well, you
do it, but you're not going to be sure of the result. You'd just have to do it and see, to be honest.
Right.
You know, you can flip that urea, for instance, or melamine, and use that as the precursor. Because, of course, melamine breaks down to graphitic carbon nitride under hydrothermal conditions as well. So you could fluorinate the melamine and try that.
You two just completely blew the minds of a lot of people.
Sorry.
Oh, I love it. Keep going. I'm enjoying it.
Well, I mean, all this is building on your work that you were showing where you were doping or you were planning on doping it with ferric chloride.
Phosphorus and sulfur.
So.
I doped it with phosphorus and sulfur. But that's mostly because I was interested in sunlight generation of hydrogen.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I was going to say, the other thing that I'm looking at there is what's the sun actually doing? I mean, is it literally in between packets of the photons that's causing the switching back and forth? Because obviously something's going on where it's cracking the water, I'm guessing, and then the sunlight is giving it the opportunity to release what oxygen and hydrogen it has, and be able to capture.
I think it goes back to what Chazes was saying. I think it actually reaches harmonic resonance. And because the water molecule is then in resonance, it becomes much easier to break, I think.
Okay, so there's two options I looked at.
I'm guessing.
I think you're right.
Well, I was going to say, the two things that I was looking at was one, to build a wheel that has, I'm sure you've seen these on, servo motors, where they literally have something with a bunch of slots in it, and light shines through it to let it know when it's made a step. But, you know, making something that's like a really fine version of that and have that spinning of... Uh-oh, Muddy, what'd you do? It makes it hard to concentrate when I start echoing. Let me see if I can... basically, to create a shock effect as it spins around over top of the thing from the sunlight shining through it. So that you're getting this dark and then light. So it's charged, then it's not charged. It's charged, then it's not charged. Mm-hmm. The other thing was to literally lay that on top of some sort of like a metal plate or something with another a wire grid over top of it, and then run an AC pulse. You can set the frequency, I'm guessing, probably pretty high. So that it's literally cracking water, then switching sides, then cracking water, then switching sides. So it pulls on the oxygen, then it kicks it away, and pulls on the hydrogen. Then it pulls on, it kicks the hydrogen away and pulls on the hydrogen, and use the graphitic carbon nitride as kind of like the catalyst to try to cut down on the amount of power it takes to do it.
You're probably going to need to set the frequency, the resonant frequency of water, I would have thought.
Well, I'm thinking that if you're using a frequency, if you go beyond that, if you go higher than that, it wouldn't work very well. If you go lower than that, you're going to waste the energy.
Uh-huh.
Hitting that precisely is probably going to be the most efficient means, because then you're using the least amount of power you need to fully crack the water without actually going over and wasting any. Kind of like the idea that I was telling them about, where you set up two Tesla towers.
Mm-hmm.
With the whole Tesla coil set up, and you charge the Tesla coil, a mini one, and you charge that with a terahertz rating, if you can do that, the highest rating you can possibly hit that thing with, and still capture that data that's coming off of that, looking at the actual wave that's coming from it, and look for spikes. Every time there's a spike, if there's a if it's a consistent spike, set the bigger one to the frequency that would match each peak of the frequency when the big one matches one of the spikes. That way you're not wasting any energy in between.
Yeah, essentially, though, your cell is a capacitor, isn't it? Two plates separated by dielectric water, it's a capacitor.
Exactly.
Right.
If you tied that into a coil, you'd have a tank circuit that would be self-resonant, wouldn't you?
Yeah, pretty much like a, what do they call it, the bifiller coil is also a capacitor and inductor as well.
Yes.
Right. Well,
so if you tied those together, it should track itself, is what I'm suggesting. You know, rather
Before we connect dots, the whole point of what I was saying was to use the one as, you know, a way to basically look for that frequency whenever you're working with something. And then
what I'm suggesting is that may not be necessary because it would be self-resonant and find its own operating frequency and sit there without you having to track it or control it.
Right, yeah, with water it would be a lot easier to do something that, like that with. The reason I came up with the other thing was because I'm really getting the idea that basically there isn't any set frequency for the planet, that it kind of drifts around because we're basically on a bunch of giant rock rafts floating around on a sea of magma. It's not just a solid single mass.
No,
so,
no, but there's a certain range. There's a certain range in there.
Right, but you've got to find the specific frequency if you're wanting to tap into that electromagnetic spectrum to draw power from it. If you drift off of it, then you're wasting power and you're getting nothing out of it if you're not actually peaking on a peak and dipping on a dip when it comes to the AC wave.
I get you. I get exactly where you're coming from. I understand.
432 sounds like a good frequency.
I thought 42 would be the correct frequency.
Exactly what came to mind.
Well, while I got my mind on this doggone thing, think about how nature actually evaporates water. All the processes going on in the evaporation process where the sun's beating down and between the heat and then the air blowing away the separated molecules. I wonder if you couldn't build some sort of evaporative system that would actually... at some point you could separate the hydrogen and oxygen. Also, you'd have, I think, nitrogen and something else up in there. What do you think about that?
I'm not a fan of evaporating systems. I think they're energy intensive, so I'm not really a fan of them.
Okay. It was just a thought that was coming across while I was listening to you guys.
When you were talking earlier about the Arabs, Matito is the big company that runs a lot of that stuff over there, and what they look at is reverse osmosis and osmotic systems, as they don't evaporate because it is too energy intensive. It's also a batch process, so it's quite difficult to run continuously, whereas it's a kind of filtration system. The filtration system's much easier, which is again where graphene comes in, and which is why people are so interested in it, because it will act as a water filter. So it'll filter the molecules, just the water molecules, out.
Well, Larry Butch just posted down here in the bottom the polarization of H2O before separation.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Can anyone hear me?
Come closer to the mic.
Now you need to get a little closer to your mic, Dr. Ed.
Okay, how about now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, talking about splitting water, splitting the molecules into hydrogen and oxygen, I read somewhere many years ago that what it was the negative and positive side of direct current, which is a magnetic force. I tried putting magnets on, using magnets and electricity, and I used some really strong magnets. They had like 86-pound pull, and I put them one way, and it would decrease production. I put it the other way, and increase production over 50% with the same amount of electrical current. I wonder if anybody else has done any experiments with magnets and stainless steel and direct current electricity for separating water.
I want to say if that's true, then I think probably your best solution would literally to be, I don't know if you guys have ever seen these. They have these cutters. That what they did was they took a heavily iron doped tungsten carbide substance, so it would have some magnetic property, and they put it on like a metal shape, like a cone or a cylinder, and then they magnetize that so that it's sticking up in the little filament pattern that you get that happens whenever you magnetize something, and then they, I guess they're plating it. Maybe they're actually dipping it in hot liquid. I'm not sure, but it basically leaves these solid spikes sticking out, so you get this massive surface area in a very small area. If you did that with, say, neodymium, the way I was talking about, and I showed some pictures of, where basically I crushed neodymium boron iron magnets, your standard magnets you find in hard drives, and then I took that powder after I smashed it up and mixed it up into epoxy, and then set that on top of a magnet, a solid magnet, and let the epoxy harden and got a magnet out of it again. It wasn't just random, you know.
Well, not to mention, I seen a video out there here recently where a guy was actually showing that you actually get a vortex effect whenever you put current to, what he did was he took a deal that had water in it with just a slight bit of electrolyte in it, and he had a plate on one side, and then he had the positive or the negative onto the actual magnet that was sitting on a plate itself, and you could actually, whenever he turned this on, see that he could actually change the direction of which this water was spinning, and you'd get a little tornado effect around this magnet. I'm wondering that while that process is going on in what he was talking about with separation of hydrogen, if by getting them molecules moving around makes it easier for the separation to occur, such as, like, I feel like you could, they used to do this back in the old tractors in the old days. Whenever the tractor got up to the right operating temperature, they would begin to inject water into the pistons and burn off the hydrogen, because there's several ways you can actually separate the hydrogen and oxygen from each other. One of the ways is actual heat. And so you could run your tractors and save on fuel. That's what they used to do back in the day whenever, you know, they were, you know, trying to save money for fuel. But with that magnet deal going on, I'm wondering if it doesn't have something to do with the actual movement of them molecules, because when you put that current to it, you know, it gets everything shook up in there. You see where I'm coming from?
I do, but I think Larry is really close on this. You know, the idea of polarizing it. You know, I mean, I'm a practical guy. When somebody gives me a practical result of something, I can't ignore it. And Larry's saying he's got a 50% improvement without applying extra current. That immediately gets my attention, you know. I think.
Well, that was Raymond Head.
Sorry?
That was Raymond Head. That's the guy that I told you with.
Oh, Raymond. Sorry, Raymond.
Yeah, that's with cold steam.
Right, and you remember the video that you put out where you were showing the keeper and the energy that it was, the magnetic energy it was generating as you moved it toward and away from the other side of the magnet. So basically it was going from the magnetic field that basically was coming from that side that you were moving away from was getting weaker, and the magnetic field that's going through the keeper from the other side being channeled through it was, you know, remaining the same strength, so eventually it became the stronger mass, the stronger force. That's what I was talking about with using those filaments and the little, kind of like the peaks or the spikes that are forming by using that powder and then centering it into a solid form, so that not only is it a magnetic field that's right out there in the water, coated in, say, stainless steel, but if you put a magnet up against the outside edge of that, touching to that, then it's actually channeling all that magnetic field straight out into the water.
Well, I like the way you think, Thomas. If you think about it on a microscopic level, you know, all the atom, it has its own electric field. Believe it or not, it's like a micro-mini universe. And so if you've got nanoparticles, magnetic nanoparticles that are like out in the spike shape like what you're talking about, each one of them are producing a magnetic field that is trying to couple with any other magnetic field in a general vicinity. Somewhere in there is going to be what I'd like to say a turbulent zone, that whenever these water molecules, since water is a dipole molecule, is literally going to be yanked around here and there. You see where I'm coming from with that?
Right.
And so that could fall into what Larry was talking about.
Larry Woods. I'm sorry. Larry Woods has been throwing some comments down here on each little step of this. When we were talking about the magnetic fields that that Raymond Head was talking about, Larry put in vortex fields help, and a comment of Geet system, polarized fog will separate magnetically without electrolysis. We'll add that in there.
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't like
that.
Interrupting very much.
No, he doesn't. I thought he's quietly sitting there typing all these great ideas.
Yeah, he's that way. He's
jump in there, Larry.
He's extremely polite, and sometimes he fears speaking up. Sometimes I think, but anyway, yeah, he's a brain that sits off in the background on most of the shows.
Well, I think some of this that we're talking about too is kind of what's going on with the graphitic carbon nitride, because the carbon doesn't have a positive or negative field on the outer layer comparatively to the nitrogen, because the nitrogen it has more electrons than it wants, or is it less electrons than it wants on the outer shell? Unlike carbon, which has, it's right in the middle. It's kind of poised in the middle. It could go either way. You can give it four more electrons by bringing things to it that are willing to give them away, or you can literally bring something to it that wants the electrons, is hungry for them, and take the four that it has, so it empties that last shell, giving it its balance that it's looking for. Or I guess the nobility it's looking for. Did I lose everybody?
Oh, no, you just put everybody into think mode.
Sorry, I was talking.
That's what I was seeing with the graphitic carbon nitride, is that the nitrogen is knocking the balance off.
Yes, yes.
Well, I think that anything that you can do to literally get those molecules active, you know, whether it be the magnetic field or whatever, anything you can do to get them active would make it easier for you to be able to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. Now, if you could find a system by which you could do that with very little amperage, man, you're talking about the holy grail of fuel. Dude, there's just so much you could do with that. This is amazing.
Well, I'm still focusing on my micro piezo system for collecting Johnson's vibration or energy, the equivalent of Johnson's energy from the atmosphere, from gases, because their gas particles are zipping around at high speed all the time. You just need something that's sensitive enough that when it's being knocked about by those and is polarized so that the power is only going to flow one direction in order to tap into that. And I mean, we're sitting in a sea of this energy that's basically, these particles are zipping around because of the power from the sun.
Yeah.
Constantly warming the planet up, so.
This is why I'm so fascinated with nanotechnologies, because if you think about all the gases that are actually bombarding each other, and not to mention that, the rays from space and the sun itself, you know, anything that, like Coltis was talking about on his atmospheric motor, you know, how the atmosphere motor actually works, and that the fine point at the end picks up that energy really well, you know, whereas, you know, you couldn't have a thick plate, it wouldn't pick up as good. But that nanotechnology, while those gas molecules are bumping into it, there's energy release happening there, you know?
Right. Well, I was going to say, the thing that I'm looking at, and I may be wrong about this, but I know the what I've read basically is that piezo elements generate a higher frequency the thinner it is, or they're capable of a higher frequency the thinner it is. The thicker it is, the lower the frequency it's going to be capped at and not be able to go beyond that. So I'm getting the feeling that the thinner the layer is, the more sensitive it will be to capture that energy from being vibrated or being wiggled around. So the idea that I'm still wrestling with is basically using sodium silicate and electrolysis to remove the sodium from it in a thin layer on a surface, so that you're left with this silicon dioxide to make the thin layer of quartz, and then just dissimilar metals on either side of it, so that it promotes a flow of electrons from one side to the other, instead of using a resistive manner like a diode has, where if you get any kind of flow one direction, it just stops everything.
Have you ever considered getting hold of some of the old crystals that used to be in the old crystal scanners and radios? Because you would actually have a known frequency for each separate crystal that you got. They come in all different ranges. That's how they used to, be able to tune into whatever radio frequency they wanted.
But I'm looking to make something that's basically a very large open flat face.
Okay. Well, maybe you could take
and then stack this with very, very small gaps in between each layer. I mean, I'm looking at basically the potential of possibly making something like a cell phone battery that never has to be charged again. As long as you don't break that thing by poking something through it, it's never going to stop giving out the same amount of power because quartz is pretty stable. I mean, it's not going to react with the two metals, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I'm a firm believer that it's fully possible to, whenever I call you up on my cell phone, my signal will charge your battery while we're talking. I'm a firm believer that's possible.
Well, I was going to say, it's not going to be your signal because you're too far away, but the signal coming from the tower, I can see.
Yeah, it's going to bounce off repeaters, obviously. So sooner or later, you're going to get some sort of signal from me, even if it's a copy.
Right. Well, the thing with that, though, is that whenever you're dealing with power transmitted like that, you get the square inverse law that affects it, so that it keeps diminishing the further away from it you get. So, I mean, maybe if you're standing next to the tower, you'd have a pretty decent amount of power coming into your, let's say you're using a coil for induction charging. But, when you're a mile and a half from that tower, that's not going to be very powerful at all.
Well, either way, you're looking at the guy who owns the tower with the amplifier. He's paying the bill instead of me.
Right. Yeah, they're still being either or uranium. It's being burned or destroyed in order to basically generate that voltage. This the big thing that really interests me in this versus, like, say, the magnet motor stuff that I worked on is, neodymium is a pretty rare substance on Earth, but silicon is extremely abundant, and so are most of the metals that we can work with. So, we really shouldn't have any trouble with anyone in the world being able to go out and find the materials that they can basically make this with once it's open sourced and dropped on the planet. I still don't think that releasing free energy is going to free the world. I mean, we need a triad system that basically completely makes every individual their own universe.
Yeah, but with great power comes great electric bills. So
yeah, well, here's my view on the whole thing is that if you can't obviously swap out systems, like dump the mainstream system completely and then jump right into an alternative system. But gradually, bit by bit, if the power companies start going down in their finances because guys like you and I and gals and are sitting out here and we're supplementing our electricity bill.
Wait, back up, not if. Well, it's already happening. They're taxing people for collecting the sun because they don't like the idea that they're not getting paid to help support that system.
Yeah, well, I agree, but what I'm saying is,
not going to get away with just energy. We need a recycling system that you can put any substance in and break it down to get the core components, and a manufacturing system that will then take that substance and make it into the new things that you need, and the energy generation.
Well,
those three things will truly make every man, woman, and child totally free and independent on this planet. And then, then they don't have to give anyone any power.
I guess what I'm trying to say, if each and every one of us is putting a pinhole in their wallet, eventually they got to get a little bit nicer on the way that they charge you your bill, because it's like supply and demand, If they're not that much demand out there for their product...
Right, that's just it, though. You're saying they have to get a little nicer. Well, that's just it, though. They get power through tyranny in most cases. So the more you take voluntarily given control over people's lives away from them, they're going to start looking for involuntary methods to take it from them if they have to.
Well, we got to sneak it under the radar, man.
I gotta relay this. One thing also that Larry was saying, he says start in third world countries where they don't have as much, and some are off grid after they use it, and then the rest of the world will want it. And I have to comment on that. One of the greatest things that I was happy about doing my videos about a long time ago, I was about ready to just drop out of YouTube and just leave my videos there, But one man contacted me from down South Africa in a place where his village had no electricity. He made one of them ceiling fan motors, generators for the ceiling fan wind turbines, and thanked me. He walked 20 20 miles round trip to go to the library to use the computer to thank me. And I thought, man, it's been a long time since I could walk 20 miles, and this kid walked there just to thank me, and it made me cry.
That's
so
cool, man.
The value in third world countries or places that are off grid is big time. He made the first electricity of his village and sent me a picture. And this thing was wired together out of just scrap boards and all that stuff. And I was like, wow. So,
well, right.
That's part of the main thrust behind my interest in this piezo generation system is that from looking at everything that I've looked at. It shouldn't be, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of skill to do it, of course, but the materials and the resources to do any of this stuff, I mean, if they don't have lye, all they need is sodium chloride, and apparently, even just like making sure that the chlorine gas has somewhere to evaporate off, you can use a single tank, you don't have to use a membrane cell to make sodium hydroxide, so you can get the starter components you need in order to make the entire component, entire device. I mean, the silicon can even be just, you know, sand from the beach if necessary. Because, I mean, a lot of the white sand is basically just crushed quartz, which is pure, silicon dioxide.
Awesome.
Put that out on the web and, you know, let them have at it. But, you know, in the meantime, keep, you know, hammering away on a 3D atomic printer and a system that can basically make, I guess, the equivalent of nanoparticles. I mean, the simplest one I want to start with is basically using carbon dioxide and extract the carbon out of the carbon dioxide to print solid carbon items using a polarized system, electrical polarized system, to bring it to the point where it's almost ready to react and break apart, and then use a laser to go through and give it the extra kick it needs to lay it down where we want it. And if we use different frequencies, each atom has its own, like, sweet spot frequencies that it actually absorbs the energy that's coming from the photons. It absorbs the photons. And you use different frequencies, then you can literally use different substances floating around in that gas to build more complex devices. So 3D printing with just about anything should be possible.
I think Raymond wanted to say something.
Well, you were talking about separating carbon dioxide into carbon and oxygen. Algae's the best way I know how to do that.
Well, yeah, but we're not talking about just separating it in general, like, say, for breathing the oxygen. I'm talking about specifically separating it and using the carbon to build something. Like, you could build a solid platform that's made out of diamond to use that as your insulator, and then run, as you're building it, you build traces of graphene in between there to make the actual traces for, like, a semiconductor circuit. And if you've got different frequencies and there's other stuff floating around the air, like ammonia and whatnot, then you can target, like, the nitrogen and other substances and use them to build your semiconductors into the circuit. So you're now almost to the point where you could print an iPhone if you want one instead of buying it from someone.
Wow.
On your desktop. You know, everything is compact. The recycling and the manufacture is now on a scale where basically you get the first one made, you can make more of them with the first one and just let it spread like a virus across the planet. And everyone then will have the ability to make anything they want.
This is why I say we should be so much further advanced as a society, because if just sitting around listening to all this mind-blowing information, I mean, come on, folks. There's a lot of brilliant individuals out there that need to be sitting at this table. We need to get out and recruit the more people for the Dream Team, because I think, literally, we could put some things together that would change this world. And, you know, even though we know the dirty deeds of the system out there, how the power company is going to want to try to do all the every shifty-eyed move that they can, I still think that, you know, if you put a widget in everyone's hand, nobody can sell a widget anymore. And so that's what we need to do with these devices.
Well, we need widget. We just need to make sure that people don't need to sell widgets to get, you know, widgets. Make sure everybody's got a widget and a widget, you know.
Yeah, just put it in their hand and run off, you know. It's kind of like my friend Dublin, who I ain't heard for a while. Hope he's all right. You know, you got that gorilla charity that he was talking about. Essentially, you know, you see somebody hungry, you run by, hand them a sandwich, and run off. And it's like, you know, who was that masked man? You know, that's...
Yeah, I will say they did shut down those people that basically brought all their deer meat out and just basically gave it away to the homeless people. And the powers that be came along and said, no, you can't do that, and took it all away from them and threw it in the trash.
My father used to do that.
What, go out and feed the homeless?
Yep. In fact, before we even had refrigeration, we had an ice box, and he'd go out about twice a week and with a flashlight and his rifle, shoot a deer, bring it home, get all the meat we could eat, and then the rest of it, he would give it to the neighbors.
Well, see, that's what, you know, there's more than enough resources on this planet, and it aggravates me to no extent when I hear people talking about, you know, they use high-tech terminology like exponential growth, you know, and this and that. You know, nature's in charge. If we get overpopulated, nature will put a bug in place and level everything back out, because nature always balances itself. So I disagree with those folks who think the world's overpopulated. And as far as resources...
That's just it, though. The world is overpopulated, in their opinion, with people that, you know, it's not them.
Yeah, but they're... Yeah, like you just said, though, they're not volunteering to depopulate themselves in order to benefit
yeah,
all humanity.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I like the way you think about what's all this profit crap. I mean, personally, I'm not rich, but I am financially sound, stable. I've got Social Security coming in. I've got house rent money coming in. I've got a big old shop. I love to work in it. I've got guys that work for me. I wish I had something that I could build and sell it for absolutely not one penny more than it costs to build it. And in other words, where I didn't have to spend any money, but help people get things at an affordable price.
Yeah, I think together.
Well, I would say I don't see there being a problem with profit. The problem is everybody has demonized the term profit, because you have people who are getting a profit by stealing someone else's value. If you're getting profit from your own value,
when you charge 10 times what it takes to build something or ship it. That's ridiculous.
Well, let me intervene in this for a second. What we were talking about doing on the Mad Science deal was actually getting together, all of us together, and building a piece of equipment. It doesn't even have to be alternative energy related, just any product that we can actually together get out there on the market, something that everyone can use, and use that money to fund our research. And so, you know, I think that's more in line of what you're talking about. So, you know, to some extent, we would be making profit, but it would all be going for a good cause, and we wouldn't be cheating nobody out of anything.
Right. But the whole goal behind that, though, is that everybody that's doing that is voluntarily doing that. So they're okay with their profit being used for what it's being used
for. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. These corporate owners that basically get there by using, you know, extortionary methods through laws and lawgivers, it's basically what has given everybody a bad taste in their mouth when they hear the word profit.
Yeah.
They don't want to say profit because it sounds like this horrible thing. But, I mean, you know, it's like jackboots. Jackboots are awesome boots. Just because
like
they're not married, just the
like,
all the horrible things they did doesn't mean the boots are no longer any good. Let's continue
like
using Larry's boots.
Idea
Let's
of,
get rid of the concept
what
of being
you can sell something for. He thinks to the rich, you sell it to them for what, you know, not for what you can get out of them, but for what it's worth. But to the poor, hey, charge them $5.
Well, you know, when you talk about ludicrous profit, and of course they've got overhead, I can understand to some extent, but whenever you throw a middleman in there, you know, you got
Hold on, let me finish. Ludicrous profit, that's because somebody is extorting something on the system, like the copyright system or the patent system.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there, Thomas, and I agree, but you know, all the stores out there, by the time you get the two or three middlemen in between you and the actual product, you already have over a 300% markup on a lot of stuff that probably only cost a few cents over in China to build. And so the system, by design, is all jacked up. I mean, you know, nobody, no, it's like guarded secret. Call up any company and ask them where they buy a certain product. They won't tell you where that where their supplier is because they're afraid you might go directly to their supplier and buy it cheaper.
Or show them how to build it themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I'd have to disagree with you on that. I know for a fact I've talked to a lot of companies, and they're more than willing to tell you, but the wedge they have on you whenever they tell you something like that is they buy in bulk because they sell to a lot of people. You're going to buy one or two things for yourself, either the company won't sell to you, or if they'll sell to you, they're going to raise the price on selling a few things, and you have to get the cheaper price, you have to buy in bulk. You have to buy a large quantity.
Well, see, then in that case, it would fall back on the factory then.
Right. Well, that's coming down to that's where their profit is through mass production. They're able to make a profit off it by selling it for the price they sell it for because they're making so much of it. If they're making just a few, then there's too much tool-up time, there's too much stop and start time, and you know, it just gets too costly to make just a few. That's why one-off places, the 3D printing is doing so well, even though it's so incredibly expensive to do 3D printing. The tooling time that you're removing and actually makes it a net negative cost to make the part.
Either way, the average Joe's getting shafted, and those out there who don't have a dollar to go to the Everything's a Dollar store are getting shafted. And so there's got to be some way in order to remedy that situation.
I'm going to tell you right now, there is a simple remedy. I've been hammering away on this. It's take the Federal Reserve's power away. They're destroying the dollar by printing too much of it. They inflate the crap out of the dollar, and then they give the money to the government to pay their debts, and then the government turns around and buys stuff, so it eventually ends up into the smaller banks. But now there's an inflation of currency, so the companies want more of these dollars for the product that they normally make. And then they turn around and come along and say, well, we'll give everybody a minimum wage raise so that we can help everybody because of the inflation, and they won't admit that they're the cause of the inflation, so they can come off as being the hero. Here, pat me on the back for solving this problem with a Band-Aid that's only temporarily going to solve the problem, because we're going to keep on doing what we do because it costs a lot of money to go to war.
Well, on the financial situation, you know, that's the plus that I see from things like Bitcoin and stuff like that, because of the way that they set it up to where...
supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the people generate it. It's not handed to one person, and then everybody else has to come and beg for it.
Well, either way, I think together with the research knowledge that all of us have, we got a combined brain of epic proportions going on here. And the more people that we can bring together at the table, we can solve all these problems and gradually work our way away from the system, you know, and change the financial way, the way the financial works as well at the same time. You know,
I go in the route of Robert Murray Smith. It shows people how to make their own graphitic ink.
Yeah.
And paint it on a board over a couple copper strips and make them a heater that they can afford.
Yep.
I got an idea.
Go ahead.
I love that. I mean, I even saw, I don't even know how long that stuff took to dry. It was quick. It was shining, and he put his hands right on it in less than a minute, it seemed. And he fired it up, and it was throwing heat. And I said, my goodness. And it seemed to be pretty efficient as well. That's great. You show people how to make that ink and put it together, you know, that's a product somebody doesn't really have to go out and buy much of.
Okay, Raymond. Yeah,
that's my stick. I call it appropriate technology. I think it's about doing things that anybody can do in an appropriate way. Well, you don't need massive machines, you don't need complicated machines, you can achieve the end result in an efficient way that's doable by everybody, and in whatever resources they happen to have around them. I mean, that thing could be made out of graphite, it can be made out of sugar, crying out loud.
Yep.
You can make it out of tons.
Raymond had an idea there.
That's what I think you do. It's that idea, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach him how to fish, you feed him forever.
Yeah.
Raymond. But you have to... It has to be appropriate, you know. There's no good, like you were saying, Muddy Mudman, there's no good telling an African guy to go out and buy himself a laser. It's not just not going to happen. But if you go and say, get a ceiling fan and walk 20 miles to the computer to find out how to do it, well, he's going to do it.
How about let's put Shaziz's idea in the motion? I mean, actually do it.
Let's do it.
Start with a plug and play, like solar panels, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, we have a federal law that if you generate more electricity than you use, you can pump it into the grid. They have to take it
They have to buy it, and they cannot pay you less than they pay anybody else.
Same lot here in the UK, Robin. We got the same thing in the UK.
They're breaking that mold. Just before you get too far off into that idea, they're literally charging people for pumping that power into the grid because they're saying that they're pumping it. Their claim is that they're pumping it during non-peak times, whenever they're actually not needing the power, so they're overloading the system, and they're trying to claim, well, we still have to keep making the same amount of power, whether they're selling us this power or not.
Solar panels produce electricity during peak hours only.
Yeah, well, peak hours, the sun's right over your solar panels, your 4,000 watts of solar panels, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, that's just it, though. They're saying that's not peak time, you know. They're peak...
Yeah, that's how the ACs are sucking all the electricity to keep these houses.
That's what I was going to say. I don't see how that's true whenever you're talking about the summertime. They're saying, oh, when the sun is up and it's in the middle of the day and whatnot, that's not peak time. Well, it costs a lot of power and a lot of electricity in order to keep those AC currents or AC, you know, running.
Exactly.
Right, keeping them running and whatnot. But, I mean, you can always break free of the grid. You can always build your solar array and run it through an inverter and run your AC window unit off of that and have your central air and heat and air unit running off of the grid so that whenever you don't have sunlight, you can run off the grid, but you're not actually pumping any power back into the grid. You're still getting the benefit and save your money.
I'm talking about doing it for, like Shazin says, for the group. There are people that live in apartments, they cannot put up solar panels. There are older people that live out on the land that they can't afford electricity. So you get
neighbors
that live in the apartments to put up the money to put the solar panels on the property of the older people out in the country, and then they get the excess money. Duh! I mean, everybody wins.
Yeah.
What you do is, I've already started Boomtown Power and Light. More power to you. Thanks, God. Anyway,
yes, sir.
If I could just get people to put up the money to buy the solar panels, we install them on people's property. The power company pays you 50% of what they sell it for. All right, a lot of people don't understand, but electric power in the United States is four separate entities. There's the people that make it, the people that run the grid, the people that buy it and sell it to the user. And that's the four separate entities. So now, if the user doesn't have the land to put up solar panels or wind turbines, but he wants to reduce his electric bill, okay? So he buys the solar panel, puts somebody else's property, they pay...
Right, you're talking about basically making a co-op, a solar co-op, instead of a farm co-op.
But the point is, with solar panels, one good hailstorm will wipe you out. But to do it...
Yeah, that depends.
You've got solar panels in all the United States, 10 here, 20 over here, 30 over here, 5 over here.
Just put some extra money into those solar the frames that you're putting the solar cells in and use some Lexan. That solves that problem.
And another thing too,
you can take a sledgehammer to that and not break it.
Even if we couldn't bring it to the extremes of pulling their entire house off the grid, even if we could just supplement their power by showing them different ways to light their house, it would benefit them as well. If you understand what I'm saying, you know. Look in that video that I did yesterday. That one LED strand was being lit up wirelessly. I mean, that doesn't take very much to actually run that. And I believe that using Ryan's stuff that he's been researching with the Slayer Exciter, we could develop a system that you could run your entire house off of using the existing wiring without having to modify anything. Just plug it right into the wall. It would charge itself during the daytime, and at night you could still use your existing light sockets to actually turn the lights off in the individual rooms at a time. And so if you could supplement just their lighting alone, I mean, you know, every time you take one room off the power grid, there's some pennies in the bucket for that individual. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yes, definitely.
He said, hey, I mean, Shaziz, you've been saying this a number of times, and Roman said it quite well. He said, why don't we just do it then? And then we got kind of sidetracked into an argument about the various politics of solar cells. But he's right. I mean, what we're talking about here is, and you've mentioned it a number of times, is getting people together and organising them to do it.
Yeah.
But that's the problem. It's great to talk things through, but, you know, at some stage or other, you have to draw a line under the conversation and say, okay, guys, now what are we going to do to organise ourselves?
Thank you, Robert.
I'm being a little bit sorry, guys.
Our damn butts and do something.
I agree.
That's it, Raymond. So the thing that we need is a coordination point, a centre point, where somebody will volunteer to be the coordinator.
I volunteer.
Good. That's all we actually
need. The business is already set up. The paperwork's already filed. Boomtown Power and Light.
Okay, tell me what you need from me.
Money. To buy solar panels and a place to buy them cheap.
Okay, I got a place to buy them cheap. M&L Solar, man. Look them up on eBay. If you buy enough of them at once, you can get them down, all the way down to 14 cents a watt.
All right, we could, if we could, listen, if we could set up a PayPal link, and every time I got a few extra bucks, I can throw a few extra bucks, and then if everybody did it, even if it was only a dollar or, you know, a few cents at a time, and we just kind of kept filling that that specific PayPal account up with funds, and whenever a system, you know, you had enough money for a specific system, and a person that you had picked out to be next in line to put these systems in, I think together we could all do it, and then throw a link up here on the site and tell everybody what the whole program is all about. And, you know, just keep tabs on everything, and keep everybody informed that you know, that those funds are actually going directly to exactly what we're talking about. You know, call it an action fund or something like that, and just keep feeding that account, throwing pennies in the bucket. I'd be more than willing to put money towards something like that if we had somebody who would keep tabs and keep informing people on the website, letting them know, look, we took this one particular elderly couple's house and made it more energy efficient, or we literally got them off the power grid, so now they have extra money for food and medicine because of these solar panel setups. You guys see where I'm coming from?
That is what a lot of Chinese people and Mexican families do. They come to the United States. They live a pew to a trailer or a house. You know, a few families. Some of them actually, especially Chinese, they'll sleep in shifts and everybody pulls their money. They get another house. They get another person into business, and they go on out and expand that way. They put a solid understanding, I guess you'd have to say, or a solid footing under them, and help them out and get them going, and as they go, they donate back.
If we do this wisely before, like Thomas was saying, when he mentioned the Lexan, putting Lexan over the tops of the solar panels to give them a protection that way. On the back of those solar panels as well, we could also recapture heat that we could actually pump into their hot water system. That would
have to do it off the back. You can actually do it all around the solar cell. I already sent the file to Cultus. I don't know what he's done with it, but I have a 3D rendering to show the whole process. Basically, you string the solar cells together electrically, and then you dip them in the solution that normally they seal them with, that when it hardens, it basically creates a protective coating over it to keep the oxygen off it, and then it's suspended inside of, basically, it's a three-layer system where you have one layer is your back. The next layer is a frame that runs around the outside edge to create basically a, there's a gap in between from edge to edge.
Like a water jacket?
Right, and they're floating in between that, and then the Lexan goes on as the last layer is bolted down to that last bit.
So
and then
you
have an opening on each end so you can pump water through that thing, and you just use E-checks on either side, one facing in, one facing out, so when the water expands, it'll shoot out the side that's basically set to relieve pressure. And when it relieves the pressure, it'll cause the water to drop in temperature and cause the E-check to close. And the pressure of it shooting out is going to cause it to come back in from the other side once the water is cooled off.
So you would get two benefits from this. Number one, you wouldn't have to run your hot water heater nearly much, as maybe not even at all if at certain points in time. But you would also get a cooling effect, which would help preserve the solar panel for a lot longer.
If you cool the solar panel, you increase its productivity.
Well, I was going to say, this is a thing, though. If you increase the productivity, you decrease the length of the lifespan of the cell, unless you can cut out a lot of the unnecessary light, which the UV protective nature of the Lexan is doing just that. So you can then, and I mean, it's just such a small amount of drop in power by getting rid of all the UV, that you set up detectors so that you can use small quantities of solar cells to get more power out of them and still get the same.
How expensive is this Lexan?
It depends on where you're buying it from. If you go down to the hardware store, it's fairly expensive. But if you can find either an aircraft manufacturing company that basically makes windows, they sell scrap. If you can find a place that basically does any kind of like manufacturing with plastic, they'll usually have scrap bins that they'll sell the stuff like per surface.
A point about the cost of the Lexan is this. If the Lexan costs as much as the solar panel...
No, it won't cost that much.
Solar panel by, say, 20%, then it's not cost effective.
Well, that's just it. It's not 20%. You're looking at a five-fold increase.
Oh, okay. Now you're talking.
Right.
Because
this is just from what I've been reading, but I mean, the UV rays are just so incredibly destructive to the actual phosphor silicon bond that it ends up, you know, that's what basically causes it to break down at 0.5% every year. If you're running
into earlier about buying solar panels for 14 or 15 cents a watt.
Yeah, you have to build your own. You have to actually build the solar panel itself, but the solar cells, the heart of the whole thing, the most expensive component, is only about 15 cents. They sell them that way because they've got chip while they're at the factory.
The point of the thing is get off our butts and do something. Plug and play. Where could we buy solar panels already there? So all we have to do is mount the daggone things and wire them up. I want to get off my butt.
All right, I say
I'm going to buy them, mount them. Let's put somebody to work building the panels. Then, if we can get the solar panels that cheap, let's put somebody to work and put some food on their table doing the assembly. I mean, it's not that hard.
You're adding to the cost because now you got to hire somebody and set up a shop and have somebody.
Right, but if you're going to buy the solar panels already built, you're going to pay at least $1 to $3 a watt.
Last ones I got, in fact, the ones I have outside, that 4,000 watts of solar panels I have right now, I paid 65 cents a watt for them.
That's cool.
78,
you're right, Scott, you're right. It was later that I found them.
Okay, so you're still talking about 78 cents versus 14 cents, and then maybe throwing an extra 25 or 30 cents per watt for somebody to build panels.
All right. Well, here's what we need. Here's what we need to get started. We need to build a database pool that where when we get out there, research prices on things like we could actually use my website to do it. That we could put together like if Thomas goes out and does some research on different prices of solar panels, he could post it on the site, and that way you'd have a section to where if you want to go buy solar panels, you can see the latest updated prices on there, where you can buy them cheaper, scratch or dent sales, and that kind of stuff. And I think you could do the same thing with Lexan, because a lot of the factories out there, like especially in glass companies, if it's got so much as a scratch on it, they can't sell it because the customer will complain. But that scratch isn't going to affect what we're wanting to use it for, so we could actually find some blemished Lexan that we could still use. It'd still be just as good as, you know, the regular glass. It just doesn't look as pretty because it might have a scratch on it. But if we build it, I can do it on the website. If we build a section to where, you know, everyone has the capabilities of going in there editing the section themselves, then they can add things to it, pictures, updates of anything. And so whenever one of us needs to go for some information, we don't have to, you know, Google the planet. We can just go check out what everybody else has already found. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
We can do this. And we can do it in a hurry,
what do you
too.
Think about that, Robert?
The only thing we're going to do is get off our butts.
Well, I'm there.
All right.
I'm off my butt every day. I'm trying. I'm out here. I'm shouting from my mountain. I'm saying, hey, brothers and sisters, let's gather together. Let's build this barn for this individual. Let's get her done. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, there's a link in the chat right there for 4 kilowatts worth of solar cells for $599.
Cool.
Sweet. And they're brand new, made in the USA, not, you know, having to ship it from God knows where. And
say it again. 4 kilowatts. What's that?
Four kilowatts of almost whole solar cells for $599.
That's a cell.
I've got them. Right. I've got a pack of them here.
I'm getting my checkbook right now. I want them. Where do I send the check?
Now, hold on. Understand, you still have to build the panel to put these in. So you need something to put this into, a frame to put them in. These are just bare solar cells.
We can handle that.
Yeah, no problem.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's not that hard to build something like that. And if we're the ones building it, we can make it more efficient, you know?
There's a link right there in the Skype chat. You can click on that.
All right.
All right, well, you guys, this has been really amazing. How about we take a quick music break, refresh our coffees and our minds, and then come back and finish out the last hour of the Knights of the Roundtable? What do you guys think?
And I say we pick Robert Murray Smith's brain, seeing as we got a special guest when we come back.
You almost sound like a zombie there.
Well, speaking of Robert...
Oh, me?
Robert, are you...
picking his brain.
Are you intrigued by the Dream Team yet?
It sounds good.
Great. How about you, Ellie? What you thinking about all this? You've been real quiet through the whole deal.
I've just been listening in. I think it's quite interesting, but it's not something that I know a lot about.
Well, you know what? There's still a talent you got, and all you got to do is throw that in the pile there, and we'll figure it all out. That's what it is. It's a team, you know. It's all of us taking the pieces of the puzzle, putting them together, and making this world a better place, one positive pebble at a time. And even if it's only moral support, you know what? You're doing a fine job as far as I'm concerned. What do you guys think?
Oh, I think she melts the conversation, brings it back down to level here and there.
Hey, man, I saw her picture up there, and she's so quiet, I didn't even know she was on there. I thought somebody put it on there just so we'd have a nice pretty face to look at.
All right, guys, well, let's take a quick music break. Everybody go get them some coffee and tea or whatever it is. And we'll come back. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned. It's been a really good show, and I hope you're enjoying it. Peace and love, everybody.
Moving Jerry the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
I love that last song. I get knocked down, but I get up again. Ain't nothing gonna hold me down. All right, well, the King Shazuz the Terrible here. I rule with an iron fist. Oh, wow. I think I lost my call there. So is anybody still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, well,
looks like everybody's here except for Thomas for the moment.
Said there was a problem with the call. Maybe that's because we lost Thomas there for a second. Well,
hey, he's got Fred's internet.
Yeah, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, and this has been a really fascinating show, and we got a lot of brilliant minds here around the table. Right, Muddy, I think you're the only one I got in here right now. Who else is in here?
Me? I think everybody's here. Everybody
okay.
Say hi.
Hi.
Yep, we're all in here.
Hi.
Yay, we got Ellie.
Yes.
All right, well, you know, hey, like I said, man, you know, and doggone it, my brain just stopped. Raymond said, you know, it's about getting up off the couch and doing it, man. We've got the knowledge, we've got the resource, we got everything we need, man. It's just pulling our resources together, getting somebody to coordinate all the mad scientists, and if you want to be a mad scientist, you got to mess your hair up, so don't forget that, you know. Did you see my last video? Go watch my latest video there. What was the name of it? Getting Close. That's the last video that I did. And look at the hair in that video and tell me if that ain't a mad science guy. But there's some really good information in that video. I was showing this rope LED lighting system, and this thing it picks up radiant energy like you wouldn't believe. And I could actually feel, and I showed in the video, where you could get arcs off the... off onto your finger from the deal. And so I actually could have touched the other end of that thing with a fluorescent bulb, would have lit it right up, just like you know, holding it out there with a Tesla coil. But there's all kinds of already on the shelf products that we could use, and we're just what I like to do is I like to find those products and find alternative uses for them, you know, kind of repurposing things and recycling junk that normal people throw away. You know, you'd be surprised what you can find in some of the appliances whenever they stop functioning that you can still use. You know, in a worst case scenario, you could build your own generator if you paid attention to any of these people out here in the alternative energy community. So, you know, with that said, what kind of ideas you guys got in line? Anybody? Don't jump to the microphone at once. You might chip a tooth.
I'm just playing my wind turbines. Playing with the wind turbines and the little bit of solar I got up there. I know my wind turbines, I got just a little bit too fine a wire. I'm working with 18 gauge. I want to move up to the 14 gauge. I also think if I could make the diameter of it a little wider, I'd have more room for a copper coil. That way the magnets can actually produce more and have more amps. The thinner wire is too much resistance. And I've noticed I didn't get out what the Bentz limit says I have available from the wind and whatever wind speed. So, yeah, I went to a 6'4" prop, and it brought it down to where it doesn't stall out when it reaches charging voltage. It was reaching too early before, but after that, it seemed like I, up to about an extra 10 miles an hour wind, I was getting everything out of it, and when the wind speeds up, I'm just a little bit too thin on the copper.
Well,
so I'm going to have to go up there, or either that or run up to a 24-volt system, which means less heat. So that'll probably help out a lot. So I'm going to redesign Muddy's Mighty Mini Wind Turbine, which basically started out. It was going to be a low-watt wind turbine, but so many changes keep coming back and forth. I think I need to go back and focus and make the smaller one, put it out, and then, which means I'll have to redesign the coils, and then come back and go for the bigger units. And I hope that helps people. My dream was to make it where industry tries to charge you... you know, they want to charge you $400 or $500 for what they call a 1,500-watt wind turbine with a 5-foot prop. Well, the available power in the wind means that you have to get up to 36 miles per hour to reach that. And we ain't got that much wind. We don't see that much wind, but maybe a few times a year, and usually that's at the front of a storm or at the tail end as the temperature inversion makes everything makes the wind pick up. But that's a short time.
Well, I'm still.
So you're not going to see 1.5. You're not going to see 1.5 kilowatts. What you wind up with, saying is the power in the wind increases 8 times every time the wind doubles. So if we say 36 miles an hour, we're going to drop down to, say, 18 miles an hour. Let's call it 1,600 watts at the top, so that brings it down to 200 watts. And then when we drop down to 9 miles an hour where our normal wind is, we're doing 10, 20 watts. You know, and that's what you're paying for a 1.5 kilowatt wind turbine?
Well, I'm still...
The lies. My whole deal on doing this is basically to get back at industry and say, look, I want to put something out for the people. So I go for a bigger prop, and I want to see decent power, which I have, and I've called it successful, except the magnets and everything else has been costing quite a bit.
I'm still waiting.
Any ideas on that will be welcome.
I'm still waiting on my high voltage lightning bolt design of your design version. That if it sends an arc that chases me around my backyard, then I'll be happy. So
well, that's what that's the kind of the opposite of what we're doing with Raymond Head. I took the ceiling fan wind turbines, which are really low wattage. You very very rarely see you. 2 amps out of them, most of the time 1 amp and under, but you know, it's a good trickle charge and it won't overcharge your batteries. On what I'm doing with you, we're going to go with the really fine wire, and I'm hoping to talk Dr. Raymond Head out of that and wind one up there when I go up there to see him. We got many projects holding back at the moment, so we're going to get up there and it'll definitely raise the voltage. You'll be able to do a spark gap wonderfully and then power your Tesla coils or whatever.
Yeah, see, I don't need amps or watts or anything. Yeah, I need volts. I need, if it chases me around the yard with a big old high voltage arc and zaps me all the way back and forth across the yard, then that's the one I need.
Oh, I hear you. I want your electron too, so I'm going to have to wind a bunch of them for you maybe.
Well, maybe we can do an even swap. You build me a high voltage version of the your generator, and we'll swap straight across for the electron in the generator. How's that sound?
Oh, I wouldn't dream of it. That's too little bit of work and cost on my end there. We could do a few more.
Hey,
so it's just a friend throwback and forth, maybe.
Do what now?
When you talk about high voltage, what are you talking about? About 3,000 volts?
You know what?
Well, you seen the voltage come out of the ceiling fan wind turbine. It goes up 100. Matter of fact, I've had them up around 140 volts and running 24 strands of LEDs. And I had to plug my laptop in just to bring it down into the end of the LED Christmas lights. Yeah, he wants to go the opposite direction. He wants to go down in amps and go up in voltage.
Yeah,
I want to be a little bit more efficient anyway.
The last ceiling fan I did was 140 volts at 350 RPM.
Well, what I want is essentially like you see on either a Wims, Hurst, or a Vandegraaff. You know, you get that really super high voltage, low wattage arc across there. That's all I need. I want a ludicrous amount of high voltage. I don't care about amps or watts. Like I said, if it'll chase me around my backyard, zapping me every foot, you know, clear across my backyard and frying out my hair, and I'm smoking when it's all said and done, then that's the one I want.
he just wants ludicrous, though. He doesn't want to go all the way into plaid.
Well, yeah, I could go to plaid if you could do it.
I can get you up to about 150,000 volts if you want.
That's what I want. You give me high voltage, I'll give you a literal lightning bolt. I guarantee it.
Oh hell, I said 150,000, but if you want more, I can do that too.
That's what I need. I need the highest voltage that I can get. Like I said, I don't care about amps or watts or anything. When you see what I'm fixing to do with it, you'll freak out. But
Where do you live?
In Missouri.
Oh no! I'm
up and I'll build the damn thing and bring it to you.
Cool.
I want to meet you anyway.
Well, we got a lot of information we can share together.
No joke.
Anyway, I'm telling you, I could keep telling people that you can get work out of voltage alone. I'm going to prove it. You watch. But regardless of all that, all the information that we talk about are the pieces of the puzzle to where I'm 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt positive that if we could all get together in the same lab, that we could literally build a device that would run the inefficient equipment that we've been sold via the mainstream market and do it for a fraction of the cost that it would take to actually be in a massive lab with all kinds of expensive milling equipment and such. I know we could do it. I mean, I got this machine in my head already, and I'm going to sit down and draw up some diagrams. I meant to do it yesterday, but I got distracted, and I'm going to get you guys each one a copy of the diagram. That way you guys can look it over and troubleshoot it, and when you see what it is that I'm talking about, you'll understand. It's using everything from the corona motor to the atmospheric motor to plasma technology, going all the way back to the mercury arc rectifier. We got amazing capacitor technology. The capacitors these days, they're getting beyond belief. They're charging and discharging capabilities, and that's why I want the high voltage deal. When you see what I'm going to do with it, you'll like it.
All right, Shazes, now when you're saying high voltage, are you talking about something that makes high voltage, or can you just take a trillion old transformer and just take a house current and boost it up? Are you talking about something like that? That simple?
Well, I would like to see the problem with generators that everybody knows about is back EMF. All right, and so. Essentially, how I explain it to people is that whenever you got a generator head and those electrons are making their path, until it's under a load, it doesn't bog down. It's only once you turn a light bulb on and put it under a load that now those electrons can make a loop around and go right back into the same generator head that you're trying to generate your electricity, which acts puts a second field in there, which acts like a brake, which slows down the armature. And so, by definition, you can only run it so far before, it'll bog itself down to where you ain't getting no energy whatsoever. Now, imagine if you bypass that entire deal and shot that energy across the spark gap so that you don't have a direct connection back into it, and you're running it in through a plasma state to where now you got the diode where it will not allow any energy to go back the other direction. So now that generator can literally sit there and freewheel. The Wimshurst generator, there's no back EMF on the Wimshurst generator. If there is any kind of coupling back, it's so minuscule that it's not anything to worry about. So,
well, to do that, you got to wind up using air coils. As soon as you put any kind of steel laminates or anything or anything like that inside your coils, you wind up with the lens effect will knock it down to 45% efficiency.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not going to allow it to. There's not actually going to be a load for a return path. There's only going to be one wire off of this system that's going to be in use.
He's not talking about a load, though. He's talking about the actual magnetic attraction to the steel.
Yeah, I see what he's saying.
You can't really get rid of that unless you literally run power through that coil to turn that steel into a magnet that's actually repulsing it away.
And yeah, we're talking about saturation,
catching it or
something. But even at that, unless you put it under a direct load from both sides of that coil, you're not going to get that cogging effect that you're talking about. And all I want is a voltage. I don't care whether it comes from a bug zapper or what. All I want is one spark that'll shoot across the gap. That's all I need. And then I'll let the earth do the rest of it. When you see what it is that I'm talking about, see, the problem, when you you told me how you do, you'll wire them direct and actually cause it to break itself. It'll actually act like a brake and stop the blade, right?
Shazam.
Yeah.
I have over 100, way over 100, 6-to-1 step-up transformers. Will they do you any good? I'll send you as many as you want.
Well, Well, I would love to do some research with them. That would be great if you could do that. I want to start.
They'll fit inside of a one price. What do they call that?
If it fits, it ships.
Yeah, if it fits, it ships.
Yeah.
I'll get the big box, the box that they'll fit in, and I'll put as many as I can in it. And you give me your address, and hell, I'll even pay for the shipping.
Cool.
Just to let everybody know that I gave them to you.
And I will. I'll do a video on an unboxing video, and also if there's anything I got that you need,
okay,
I can ship it back.
All the Transformers in fluorescent lights.
Cool.
This is exactly what I was talking about, man. If you've got either skill or resources working together as a network, the only expense then becomes the shipping between us. So,
see, the thing is, when I do a demolition job and we take anytime you do a remodel, you have to upgrade to energy codes and so forth, and the old lights won't meet energy codes. So we have to take them out, and absolutely nothing wrong with them. Burning, I mean, great. Light fixtures, ballast, transformers, bulbs, everything. It has to go in the trash.
Well, even
doing that.
Even if they are bad, even if they won't work in the conventional deal, save them because we can still light them up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll go up to the post office tomorrow and take one with me and see what box that they've got that they'll fit in. And then I'll get hold of you and let you know how many I'm going to send. You give me your address. I'll pay for the shipping the whole damn 9 yards. Just let everybody, when you do something with them, let them know that bring it here, Boomtown Laboratories donated them to you.
Yeah, I will do that. I'll be more than happy to do that.
I did the same thing with a whole bunch of UPS. They basically have an inverter built into them and a battery system and whatnot. They pull anybody who's looking for those, a cabling company that sets up fiber optic and whatnot, they have to basically pull those before they fail. And they get so paranoid about that they pull them when they still have more than half their life left them in, and just go ahead and most places just chuck them in the trash.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I've got stacks of them, you know.
How big a shop do you have?
Well, it's right now it's kind of cluttered, but it'll be eventually be bigger because I'm working on a larger lab.
Okay.
He's underground, too.
Scott and I are going to come up and see you here real soon, a few months from now. I'm going to bring you all the lights you need to light that place up.
Cool.
So even fireman can see his way around in there. And I'll even bring you the wire to wire it up with.
Right on.
Yeah, he's got to pay to get rid of them. He'd rather give them to somebody that can use
them. Oh, I'd take them, believe me. Because what I'm working on, I'm telling you what, you guys are going to like it, man. But that's why I say I want one of those versions of the generator that Muddy's talking about, because I can say, you know, you can see this even with just connecting your battery on a DC. If you watch really carefully, right before you actually make contact, it's already arcing across to that battery terminal. You can see it. If you pay attention. And so with any generator, if you get that generator close enough to anything, you got a little spark gap inside there, it'll literally jump across there. Now imagine if you had access to a wind turbine that would put out a super high voltage arc, you know, and I don't even have to drain off of both sides. All I need is just the energy off of one side of there. I can ground the opposite side or whatever, I don't know. But like I said, wait till you see what I'm going to do with this thing.
Hey, Robert, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
The carbon batteries that you were talking about, all carbon batteries, do you have to charge those, or do they just kind of put off?
They just put off by themselves.
Wow, so you don't need to charge them?
No.
Oh, wow.
Well, see, I'm running one now. I've got one connected up right now, and it's just sitting there. I mean, it's only a demonstration cell, so it's a single piece. And it's about 5 square centimeters, and it's putting out 3.7 milliamps. Been doing that ever since we started talking.
Cool.
You're going to be showing people. You're going to be showing people how to build them too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you should talk to them about about the radiant energy aspects to the swag generator.
Yeah,
Robert, what size carbon do you use? Is it carbon rods or what?
No, it's a special ink that I've developed out of graphene.
Hey.
I've made a paint out of graphene, so I took some graphene and mixed it up with some binders. I use any binder, actually. I use a couple. of different ones for different purposes. So I use gum arabic for one, I use polyurethane for another, I use polyvinyl acetate for another, I use sodium silicate for another. So you do use a different binder system, but it's all got graphene in it. And when you make up the ink with graphene, it has some pretty amazing properties. Now, basically, I've been painting it on whatever I can paint it on. So if you were sat here and you didn't move, I'd probably paint you. So I've painted it on whatever I can paint the damn thing on, and then testing it with stuff like power generation, whether it works in salt concentration, what its ability as a capacitor is, how it does for radiant energy collection, all that sort of stuff. Now, this was sort of inspired by the Japanese who came up with the carbon-carbon battery. Somebody wrote to me saying, can you make a carbon-carbon battery? And I thought, well, hey, I'll give that a go. So I painted up a piece of paper and I've stuck it in some salt water and it's busy generating away. I've done nothing to it, not charged it or anything. It's just generating away.
You got to show me how to do that. I know where to get carbon rods. 3/8 of an inch diameter, 12 inches long.
Oh, okay.
Try to get Ryan in here.
Hey, you got any commercial welding shop sells carbon arc welding rods?
Yeah, I use flake graphite. Either that or Schlanken vein graphite. It's the best quality graphite you can get. It means it's very pure. It's got a 99.97% purity. It's also got when carbon atoms bond together, there's a number of ways that they can bond, and it helps form the shape of the carbon. When it's got something called sp2 bonding, it forms like the graphene. If it's got sp3, it's amorphous.
How much power are you getting out of this thing?
Well, it's 5 square centimeters and it's currently at 3.7 milliamps.
Oh my god.
So cool, isn't it?
If I built one, yeah. Say 2 foot by 2 foot.
Well, Muddy Muddy Mudman was just talking about 20 watts out of a wind turbine, and I was thinking, my god, my last swag generator was generating that.
How much power
yeah,
would I
get? That's 20 watts like, and 9 mile an hour wind.
1 meter yeah. By 1 meter by.
Sorry, Ren. Sorry, I missed what you said.
Like you're talking about, 1 meter by 1 meter by 12 inches high, how much power would you get out of that?
God knows. Probably linear.
A what?
So you probably just multiply it up, probably. Until we actually build one of those, we don't really know. I mean, I can tell you what a 5 centimeter square is doing. That's what it's doing. Until we actually build one, I don't know. But I would guess it was linear. So just multiply the area.
Okay, then make Jane go sure Scott understands exactly how to do it. Him and I will get together, I'll buy the material and the tools to build this sucker.
I'm quite happy to do that. I'm quite happy just to build one myself because it takes nothing at all. I've got gallons of the ink, I've got a ton of plastic, I just paint up these sheets. The thing I'm investigating at the moment is what effect the different salts have on it.
When
we finish chatting here, I'm going to do a video, so a video on that will go up before the end of the day, so you'll be able to see that.
That'll be sweet. I'll be looking for it.
Yeah, it'll go up before the end of the day. But it really is just this ink painted on a piece of plastic. That's all it is, and stuck in some salt water.
Your accent is that of an Aussie. Are you in Australia?
No, I'm Irish.
Well, you're Irish? How come you speak an Aussie accent?
You're pretty smart.
He's not an Aussie.
You
sure
sound like one.
I'm an Aussie.
You are?
Yep.
I'll be dog. They go women that. I didn't know they had women that pretty down there.
Oh, he's a flirt.
Robert, you're in Ireland?
Sorry?
You're in Ireland?
No, I'm in England. I live in England, but I was born in Ireland.
Okay.
So you're not out there where the constant big wind is?
No. No. No, we don't get much wind. I'm in Kent.
I want to build one of them things.
Well, like I say, it'll go up later on today, Raymond, and I don't keep secrets. It's all laid out. If you want to know how to make the ink, there's a video on it.
Great. Great.
You have to follow the links through sometimes, but the videos are all there on my channel. You can build this thing. I mean, I think there's about 2 or 3 videos you need to watch. But you watch those 2 or 3 videos, you can just build it.
What does it cost? What does it cost per gallon to build to make the ink?
About per gallon, pound or a couple of dollars, maybe
That's
$10.
All?
About $10, yeah, be about right.
Hey, Scott, I got a 5-gallon drums around here. We can make 50 gallons of it quick.
Oh, yeah, I know you. You don't do nothing small. He
doesn't do things by halves, does he? No.
Just for your information there, Mr. Robert Smith, you'd laugh if you saw, because he's had the largest dual escapement in the world up until a couple years ago, where some guy built one a couple foot taller. It's a pendulum, and he's I ought to let you explain that, Raymond. Your last results you told me the other day.
Yeah, the two-stage oscillator, the big one I've got outside, I haven't messed with it in a long time because it's so daggone big. It's 9 feet tall, 24 feet long, 2.5 feet wide. The frame, not the pendulum, the frame is a little over 5,000 pounds, and the pendulum itself, the actual pendulum is 512 pounds. And when it swings, I built it wrong. I can't swing it a full 90 degrees in both directions, or 180.
Closer to the mic.
I can only swing it at about 85 degrees each way, which would be about 170 degrees. But it has a pull of over 1,200 pounds. And I actually have had a alternator hooked to it and operating it with my fingers, just two thumbs, and applying about 20 pounds of pressure for 2 inches on each swing. It was knocking out about 140 watts.
Where are you in the U.S., Raymond?
I'm 27 miles north by northwest of Dallas, Texas, up in a little bitty town called Lewisville.
All right.
About 10 minutes from the airport.
Yeah,
my wife is American. We come to New York every summer.
Yeah, now I built an escapement, like a grandfather clock escapement, to operate the pendulum, mainly to measure accurately the actual input energy. Okay. And the last one that I did, I built a smaller unit. It's only 12 feet long and 6 feet tall, and again, about 19 or 20 inches wide. The pendulum on it weighs 95 pounds and swings at roughly 4 foot, and 4.5 feet, actually. And it was, I had a 60-pound weight driving it, but every 2.5 inches of 60-pound weight would fall coming down driving it. It would pick up 16 pounds, an inch and a quarter, 50 times. So I was having 1,000 inch-pounds of output power, but I was only putting in 150 inch-pounds, which is a 6.6666 times more power out than in.
Wow.
Over unity, Bubba.
Yeah. And
there's free energy, there's clean energy, there's renewable energy, there's all different kinds of energy. He's dealing in that free energy and over unity. And I love to go up there and play all the time. Spend a lot of time up there.
Scott's heard this before, but I'll use an example of over unity. To me, over unity is when you take a pound of coal, burn it, turn it into steam, put the steam in a steam shovel, and dig 20 tons of coal. That's over unity.
Good point.
Yeah, and that's where people and me get in disagreement, because people like to say there ain't no such thing as free energy. When's the last time you ever got a bill from the sun or the wind? You know?
Exactly.
So there is, we're floating in the sea.
All energy is free. All energy is free. It's the machine to convert it to usable energy that costs money.
Exactly. Right, that's
why I was talking about converting the Johnson's energy into basically a constant direct current instead of it just being
The Johnson's
kinetic energy that's in the gas that's around us.
But the machine to convert it is what's going to cost money.
Yeah, and so we don't have to get all crazy about it. All we got to do is redesign the way that we use electricity, you know?
Exactly. You can't.
My big point was Raymond doesn't do anything small. He figures if he builds it big, he doesn't have to build small parts.
Well,
exactly. I got fat fingers.
If anybody's got any access to those doggone, they call them direct drive. They're in washing machines and dryers. You know, it's a
X13s.
No, that's not what I'm talking
Smart
about.
Smart motors.
They're stator motors that are inside the modern washers and dryers. You know, the old washers and dryers used to have a transmission in them.
Smart drives.
Yeah. But now these newer ones are stator motors, and those things right there, I watched a video where a guy, he was pulling some serious arcs off this thing. Of course, now he was running it with a gasoline generator and or a gasoline engine, but either way, the arcs that was coming off of this thing were ludicrous. I mean, you could start fires with the arcs that he had coming off of there. And so, you know, that's, if I could get a hold of 10 of those, I could literally build a system with those right there.
Think of how many cigarette lighters you'd save on in a year.
Oh, man, I just killed a cigarette lighter here during the show, and that's why I had to get out the butane torch and the, I don't know if you heard it in the background, that little thing that you, it sparks, you know, you squeeze it, and they use them for welding to light the torch.
Right.
So I lit my last cigar with a propane torch.
I used Boomer's glasses one day.
Yeah?
With the sun? I bet you had a lot of patience with that one.
I bet you saw glasses.
Anyway.
I've got a couple stacks of full-size Fresnel lenses.
I had to do some close work.
Yeah, if you get underneath one of those Fresnel lenses to light your cigarette, don't get your hair too close.
Be careful when you're walking around that thing beside you walking around, too. Cause I've got one out there. I mean, I just kind of blow a little dust over there in the area to find the focal point. I bring the board up there, and I hear, poof, it's immediately.
Well, think about that for a second. What we just talked about, the Fresnel lens is amazing, and you can actually build one out of water, you know, water and plastic, you know, create a lens.
You can build a lens. That's not a Fresnel lens. The Fresnel lens is all about breaking down the curvature so that you don't have to have all the mass between.
Yeah, but I'm saying
to get the curves.
I'm saying you can make a crude magnifier that will you can light stuff with it.
Clear sheet that'll bubble or that'll dip and fill it with water.
Yeah, but
and it's actually a plano convex lens too. So
with those Fresnel lenses, there's a lot of power being focused into one specific area. That, I mean, that's an extreme amount of heat. You wouldn't want to put your hand underneath there. That's for sure.
Up to 4,000 degrees.
Well, I was going to say two square meters.
Because I just read a report here last year that they claim nowadays that it's 30% of your grass fires along the side of the highway come from water bottles that are not empty. People throw them out on the side of the road. The sun gets through them, and the water, because the curvature of the bottle, the light goes through it, and it magnifies it and sets a dank on grass on fire. 30% of the
clear
grass fires are from water
concentrating
bottles.
All the light into one tiny area. That was, like I said, my idea behind setting up basically a Fresnel array of mirrors out in the desert, and then concentrating like about 30,000 square feet of sunlight from the desert into a central area. Use a clear chamber so you can pump it full of like argon or something to keep the substance inside free of oxygen.
150 mirrors in my warehouse. Come on over and I set it up.
Yep, he's got it.
Well, let's see, the goal behind this was to basically show people they could do it with anything. Like, you could use MDF, which is mechanically extremely smooth, and the shiny side of aluminum foil.
What about real mirrors?
Yeah, he's got real ones.
You'll get a better effect out of that because you're not wasting any energy because of the imperfections on the surface of the aluminum.
I've got 80 mirrors that are 3 foot wide, 7 foot long. I have another 75 mirrors that are 2 foot wide, 4 foot long.
The whole point of this, though, is you have to have a whole bunch of small ones, and then you control their angle and the angle that they're sitting, the device that they're holding.
That's why they make glass cutters.
Don't want to sound like a smart butt, but you ever heard of a glass cutter?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. They need to all be a bunch of small ones so you can angle each one of them to get everything concentrated down into a small area.
We're thinking of building a few Rotocola Sola self-starting Stirling engines to make the heliostat for these.
Cool.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not even thinking about running an engine or anything. I'm talking about instantly, like, almost vaporizing sand as you pour it through it to make glass out of it.
Cool.
Thomas, I got a question. Why would you want to build it small?
Well, no, no. The mirrors are small. But the reason for the small is because the same reason why grass catches on fire whenever you run sunlight through a mirror or through a lens. You're focusing the light to a central point. You're working with a massive amount of sunlight and concentrating it all. Because I mean, you can't compress photons. I don't know where the point would be where you could compress so many photons into an area where they actually start interacting with each other and you can't get any more in there. So
I mean, if I know Boomer, he's thinking more in the lines of taking a 55-gallon drum and flash boiling water for steam.
Yeah,
that's just it. I'm not talking about flash boiling water. I'm talking about flash boiling sand, glass.
Why not?
Yeah, so you can basically set up a chain that basically goes underneath that, and it's just molds to pour the stuff into and make solid quartz and bricks or whatever to put solar cells underneath. And they're strong enough, you could run, you know, a semi over thousands of times before there would be any damage to it. So you could basically build roads out of it that are solar roads.
Well, guys,
my point is, what's the difference between a 152 inch by 2 inch mirrors and a 152 foot by 2 foot mirror? What's the difference?
Well, you get a larger surface area.
It's a bigger area.
But if you have 150 of those 7 foot by, let's say 7 foot by 2 foot mirrors, and you break them all down into 1 foot increments, so that you're concentrating now not on a 7 foot by 2 foot area, but a 1 foot area, you're increasing the amount of heat that you can generate in that spot.
Well, how much heat do you want?
Here's the thing, okay? If you tilt the mirrors, you instantly remove the heat, so you can literally jump up to, say, 30,000 degrees and then jump back down to normal atmospheric temperature minus the amount of time that it takes for the heat that you pumped into it, that it's holding, that it has to release it.
All right, well, guys, as fascinating as all this is, we're down to the last 7 minutes of the show, and so this is the time we need to go around and let everybody put their last words in their YouTube channel, so... Who wants to go first there?
Not me.
All right. www.youtube.com/muddymuddymudman will get you to mine. That's all about how to build free energy from just about everything in the trash. Stirling engines, ceiling fan, wind turbines, and all that kind of stuff. That's about it. I'm thinking about going into building... batteries that use either Epsom salt or alum. I'm going to start playing with those.
You should point out that man is with two N's, so that way they'll find you.
Yeah. And also, if everybody links their YouTubes together, that'll make it easier for people to find, because you could jump on any one of our YouTubes and find the rest of us. So, who's next?
Robert.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on the show, guys. It was an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Well, it's been our honor. You got a YouTube channel you want to share with everybody?
Yeah, it's Robert Murray Smith. Just stick that in, you'll find it.
Cool. All right. Well,
R-R-A-Y.
All right. Who?
Yeah.
Who else we got? Thomas?
I don't have a whole lot of stuff on my YouTube channel, so you can find me at BorgSteamFactory.com and just go to the contact page, and you can send me a message. It'll shoot right past all of my my blocking that keeps out the spam, so you can get direct access to me. So I've got VoxelBlock.com. If you go to page2.html on that, it gives a clear outline that's still being developed for building a little more, I guess, comprehensive research facility that's self-sustaining. So, you know, adds things like, you know, markets on the weekend for the makers there to be able to contact the public through, like, you know, like a flea market, so they can generate funds for their stuff and give lectures and whatnot to the general public so they can show off what they've been developing during the week and whatnot.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it. Everything else is going to take forever, and people have to sit there with a pen to write everything down if I want to give them Facebook pages and all that.
Well, so just throw some links in the chat.
Yeah, I'll throw some links on my main page. Borg Steam Factory is not too hard to find. If you type in brass goggles and Borg Steam, you'll find me.
Cool. What about you, Larry?
I'll just read what Ryan wrote. Keep testing, keep learning, and keep sharing.
Cool. And Ryan, go out and check out Ryan from Abrams Lab on YouTube as well. Subscribe to his channel. He's working on some Slayer Exciter stuff that's really good. And Desert Experimenter, he's not here today. Check him out. And Mitko, I don't remember what his YouTube is, but we'll get links to all that. Ellie, do you got a YouTube channel?
No.
All right, well, just, you got something you want to say to the world there before we get up out of here?
Just that it was great chatting to you, and that I should go get my beauty sleep, because it is now 1:30 a.m.
Well, I hope you get a good rest. Thanks for...
Always keep an open mind.
So, always an honor to have you on here. And who else do we have left there? Raymond, you got a YouTube channel?
Yes, sir. It's RHIP100.
Cool.
100.
Capital letters.
And one more thing. Anybody out there that's been working on this stuff, if there's anything I can do to help as far as getting material, I own a construction company. I do a lot of demolition work. I throw good stuff away all the time. I am more than willing to send it to anybody that will pay the shipping on it. My time to pack it is free.
Cool.
My time is free. The material is free. It just costs money to ship it. You'll pay to ship it, and I'll send you whatever you want, anything you want.
Well, that's
it cost him to get rid of it, as a matter of fact. He thought it was cheaper to bring a whole bunch of stuff to me all the way from Louisville down here to Granbury, 40 miles southwest of Fort Worth.
Well, that's so the kind of stuff I like to hear, man.
Miles to bring me stuff, and it was cheaper. So, yeah, ask him. He's got it. He'll give it.
Cool. Well, guys, gals, we're going to kind of run over here for our outro. But it's been a fascinating show. Thanks to Robert Murray Smith and Raymond Head and all the Knights of the Round Table and the Dame of the Round Table. Been an awesome show, and I can't wait for the next one because they just keep on improving. So if you like what you've heard on this show, go out there and tell your friends on your social media networks and share links, and we'll share this information as fast and as furious as we can, and hopefully it all benefits you. And it's easy to become a Knight of the Round Table. All you got to do is just simply call in and join the table. It's everybody's platform. You can be an honorary knight just by showing up in the chat room and posting links of relevant information and things that will help people out and that kind of stuff. It's all about making the world a better place, one positive pebble at a time. And so with that said, peace and love to everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I'll have the podcast up ASAP so that you all can broadcast, rebroadcast, or share it with your friends. So, everybody take care.
Man.
Knight lives in that castle over there. I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water.
signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system!
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot. No, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the Pramalot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.